All right, we need to call the meeting to order. Do we have a quorum? All right, we have a quorum, so, Representative Torkelson, would you move the minutes?
I moved the minutes of the last meeting.
All right, Representative Torkelson moves the March 23rd minutes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no? The motion prevails. All right, the very first, bill that we will be hearing this evening is House File 1435, Representative Knuth. And, members, we have, if you will look at the minutes, we have, 14 bills up this evening. So I am going to ask that we, economize wherever we can, with our comments and our questions and, try to be as conscious of the hour as possible. So Representative Knuth, have you asked somebody to move your bill?
I would be happy to do it if you would like.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Knuth moves House File 1435, and it would be laid over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance Bill. Oh, Policy Omnibus Bill, excuse me. Representative Knuth, would you explain the bill, please?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1435 comes out of some local issues that I've been continuing and increasingly dealing with in terms of some highways and freeways that go through my house district. And I'm going to kind of explain the general policy that I'm putting forward, and then I have the mayor of Arden Hills here to explain why this issue has come up in my particular district and some of the difficulties we have. So House File 1435 would make a change to our sound abatement standards and put a multiplier on the cost effectiveness dollar limit per resident per decibel reduced. It would multiply it by 1.85. And the cases in which it would do that would be when we're changing a trunk highway from an expressway to a freeway. So we're changing the type of road. We're making more limited access, and in the specific case, increasing the speed. And really, you know, when residents buy properties next to roads and they understand the noise issues, that's one thing, and I think we shouldn't necessarily be changing that. But if we look at actually changing the type of road and the access and the speed and similar things like that, you're changing something else that the residents weren't necessarily buying into. And so I think by adding a cost effectiveness multiplier to our cost effectiveness dollar limit, that's one way we can recognize that change. And so that's what the bill is trying to do. And as you can guess, I have a local experience with this particular issue. And if you've been handed out a map, and on the map you see 694 going east-west across the bottom, 35W going north-south, and then Trunk Highway 10 going diagonally between those two, going right through Arden Hills. And the county, Ramsey County, is looking at changing the intersection where it started between Highway 10 and Highway 96, changing that from a stoplight intersection to a grade-separated intersection, significantly altering the local access and also some of the speed issues and making this even more of a kind of a shortcut between 35W and 694. And MnDOT actually does consider this integral to its overall freeway plan. And so making that change increases speeds, it increases trucks and other commuters' desire to use that kind of shortcut, and puts them really close to some of the neighborhoods, as you can see, where it says Floral Park and Royal Hills Park. And also, if you look up at Round Lake on the map, just to the southwest of that intersection, there's homes there as well that would be impacted. And the bill would really affect those homes locally. It wouldn't affect the other ones, and you know, we're having conversations about that as well. But the overall policy is when we categorically change a road and through our neighborhoods, I think having some recognition of that is important. And so I'm going to turn it over to Mayor Stan Harpstead to talk a little bit about this area and the impacts our residents feel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Stan Harpstead, Mayor of Arden Hills, and I really want to thank you for listening to our concerns.
Welcome,
Arden,
Mr. Harpstead.
Arden Hills is a city of 10,000 right at the junction of 694 and 35W, as Representative Tanitha told us. Historically, traffic has funneled, pushed to the east by the Mississippi River and pushed to the west by the chain of lakes that are the St. Paul water system to funnel down through this neighborhood. And the major stress reliever that was afforded historically by Trunk Highway 10, which actually preceded or predated I-35W, was kept by the MnDOT system in order to relieve the pressure from 35W as it comes south. Those of you that want to come from the north and go to St. Paul probably have come through this section of road. And you know that there's a one stoplight on a 1.7-mile section of road, and that's really the only speed bump, if you will, in the system. And right now, due to safety concerns, it rightfully is being removed, but by doing that, it also is causing a cascade of other effects on the local community. Specifically, it's going to result in increased traffic speed and increased traffic volumes, and that will translate into increased noise. So what we really are doing here is saying that we would ask that you consider some way of reducing those impacts on the local community by allowing us to look at opportunities to cover the cost or mitigate the noise options and find some way to address this, because it's something that we've grown up with as a community, and really it's one of those things that can adversely affect neighborhoods, and that's something that we're not interested in accomplishing.
Thank you. I do know that a fiscal note has been requested for this bill. I'm wondering if our fiscal analyst could tell us the progress on where we are with that.
Madam Chair and members, the Department of Transportation is currently working on that fiscal note, and I expect them to have it done within the next couple of days.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions from members?
Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair, is MnDOT going to speak to this bill?
Is there someone from MnDOT who would speak to this bill? Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the city, my name is Frank Pascal. I'm Director of MnDOT's Office of Environmental Services and Chief Environmental Officer for the department. We're aware of this bill, and we have a number of problems with the bill. First off, it directs us, we establish a noise policy, and that policy, in accordance with some of our exemptions and our regulations with Pollution Control Agency, directs us to do reasonable noise mitigation. Our policy has established a cost-benefit analysis, a cost per decibel per resident, so that meets a definition of reasonableness, and that we treat all residents of our trunk highway system equally. We treat them fairly. This would take a subset of that policy and that effectiveness and say that residents that are adjacent to a subset of our roadways are more equal than others, and they get a 1.85 ratio cost-benefit analysis compared to everybody else. The bill also directs us to change our federal, to be in accordance with our federal policy in paragraph A, and then says in paragraph B, to institute this 1.85, which I believe Federal Highway Administration would interpret as not being in accordance with federal policy. We would have two possible reactions from the Federal Highway Administration to that. They would say, one, that any noise wall that meets Category B, but does not meet our previous policy, would not be eligible for federal funding, so the state would have to install that totally on state funds only. I can foresee a less likely but possible explanation if Federal Highway would say, we have established a noise policy that is not in accordance with their regulations, and they would not participate in any noise mitigation whatsoever. I don't think that's likely, but it is possible.
All right. Madam Chair, I heard the motion was to be possibly held over for inclusion in the policy bill, but I'm not understanding why this won't be going back to finance when we hear that there's a fiscal note in virtually any study.
All right. Mr. Burris, would you be the person that I would ask about that? Or
Corinne? Madam Chair and Representative Holbrook, I'm not sure if the fiscal note will come back with costs or not. Based on my conversations with MnDOT up to this point, it sounds like what they're going to include is that it won't show an overall cost on the front page of the fiscal note like we usually would see, but there will be discussion as to that this may take away funding for other projects or may decrease funding for specific projects, and I'm not sure if MnDOT would like to comment on that further or not.
Well, and Madam Chair, we have the chair leader here.
Yes, I was just going to ask
to hear it, but given that it's deadline week and if in fact there is a fiscal note associated with it, to move it to finance would at least keep it alive, and you can certainly, if it's an important policy issue, could be added as an amendment on a policy bill.
I appreciate the advice, and let's just ask Chair Leader what he would like to have us do with this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it should come to finance.
All right.
And Madam Chair, if I might recommend that.
Representative Holbert.
My recollection last time I worked with noise wall issues along the interstate system that, in fact, certain areas, it depended on what was there first, the freeway versus the houses, on whether or not they would ever qualify for noise walls. Can you give the committee just a little bit of information, generally what the rules are on interstates for noise walls?
Madam Chair, yeah. Representative Goldberg, our noise policy, we treat the construction of noise walls under two different cases. One where we are doing expansion projects, capacity improvements to an existing roadway, and we are treating that as part of the cost of construction. We also have a noise retrofit program that we have done a noise study on all of the residences along our metropolitan freeways which do not have noise mitigation walls or berms, and have used this cost effectiveness goal to prioritize them in cost effectiveness. And so we are trying to go back and install retrofit noise walls in those areas. In previous, when we did the first major noise wall installations in the 70s and 80s, whether or not the freeway had been there before had been a factor, you know, in that. We are, in some cases, residences declined it. We are now giving them another opportunity. So we are going back and, like, I know in some of my days on I-94 in St. Paul, and are giving them the opportunity, some have taken and some have not, to retrofit those walls. If on a new highway construction project, and this is maybe where it's coming in, and I'll use 610 as an example, we would do the analysis based upon its existing land use, and there was vacant land there at the time, we might not have built a noise wall. While we were building, if those residences came in before we built that segment of 610, we would have built noise mitigation as part of the project. If they came in after we built that project, we would not.
And Representative Holbrook, thank you. And can you tell me on this list that you have where you've identified the need or that they've qualified for noise mitigation under current levels of funding, how many years will it be before those communities that have are expecting to be receiving noise walls under your current standards, how long will it be before those are all built?
Mr. Pascoe.
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, we have it's been a while since I've looked at it. We have a list of several hundred eligible locations, and we're getting to one or two sites a year.
All right, thank you.
All right, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. I do believe we need to take another look at that. I mean, what you're suggesting is you direct the department to establish a policy taking some things under consideration. I think we all have our frustrating experiences. Mine was 280, and that neighborhood did exist. All 280 was supposed to do was a road that took traffic off of Eustis, and then it evolved. The neighbors, at their own expense, had to do all the noise measurements and discovered, in fact, that that roadway exceeded noise standards 23 of 24 hours a day. But it took them, their initiative to do that, and then our legislative initiative. So it does seem to me that something is not working, and certainly one of them might be finances, but in this case, I think that wasn't even going to be on the drawing board, and they weren't determining whether where this was in the overall scheme of things in terms of noise standards relative to the neighborhood. So maybe sending this to the finance division gives us some chance to think about this. What you're suggesting is legislation directing a new policy, and we can maybe think through after we see the fiscal note how that might evolve. But there's something seems to be broken beyond just the funding of this program.
And if I might, Representative Hausman, I agree with you, but I don't think we should single out one type of roadway. If we are going to do a study about this issue, it should be more generic in nature to find out where we're at and as far as the needs and the costs, rather than just singling out one type of roadway for special consideration.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. And Representative Knuth, do you have any finishing comments?
Oh, well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I come at this issue, I think, from a similar perspective as 280 would be, as in Trunk Highway 10 that's been there for decades, that wasn't necessarily built and neighborhoods built around it to be connecting two freeways and be kind of a reliever or a shortcut, or if people going to St. Paul will go down that road. That's not what we built this road originally for, and it's kind of evolved into that. And frankly, neighborhoods are having to deal with that in different ways and looking for ways to help mitigate some of those impacts. And you know, I'm happy to continue working on the bill and with members of the Transportation Committee who are more knowledgeable about these things than I am, look at how we could do it in a way that makes sense overall and maybe doesn't quite single out this way. I mean, I came at it because this is what I've experienced in my district, and I think it is, you know, categorically changing a road and changing how traffic is moving through a neighborhood, and I think I would hope members would support the bill, and I would be happy to continue working on these issues and figuring out how to make it make sense in a broader way, too.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Knuth. And because Cheerleader is now requesting that this be moved to the Transportation and Finance Committee, I'm going to call for a vote. So all those in favor of sending House File 4235 to Transportation Finance, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. The motion fails. Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
All right. I would like to call up House File 1074, Representative Abler. And just again, members, that bill took us 16 minutes. I am watching the clock. We have 14 bills ahead of us. Do the math, and it will tell you how long we will be here. And this one, I'm sure, because Representative Abler is presenting us a complex bill, it might take a little longer than 16 minutes.
Representative Abler. Short and simple. If you would mind putting the bleed all on and then recommending you go to local government, we'd like to go to as many committees as possible, and so that's one that maybe we may have to visit. So, and then this bill can date over, I think, for...
Okay.
Follow action tomorrow. You are moving then.
We're working off the Senate file. Okay.
No.
We're not?
If we could move the DE2 amendment.
No, we're not. We're working off the
Senate file. And he said
this is a lead-off. One could delete everything. It could be right there in your package.
Is that this one?
No. There's an A1, an A2, and an A3.
We're looking for the delete all.
You can have mine if you want.
H107 DE2?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Do you want to move that to put the bill in order?
Yes.
We can talk about it, and then we'll talk about it.
Representative Abler moves, I move H107 DE2 as a delete all amendment for House File 1074. Representative Abler.
Do you want to adopt it or do you want to...
Oh, we have to adopt it.
Well, whatever you like.
Please forgive me, you guys.
It's good question. Okay. Either way you like.
All those in favor of accepting this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll be brief, and I have two witnesses who are very conversant. The Delete-All puts the bill in the form to resemble the work of Vesna Hortman and some of her work. This has been discussed with many groups already and been discussed with more groups, I think. The city of Ramsey needs a bridge. The community likes bridges, so this should just be the white hat bill of the day, I would think. I'll tell you why this bridge in particular is so good compared to the end of the bridge is our county engineers here along with my mayor of Ramsey. And I'll let Mr. Fisher talk about some of the technical parts of the bill, and then the mayor can talk about why we need the bridge.
All right, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Doug Fisher. I'm the Anoka County Highway Engineer.
Welcome, Mr. Fisher. Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Thank you. Anoka County does support this bill. Our county board has passed a resolution encouraging Anoka County to have design-build authority, which we do not have now. We do support the delete-all amendment specifically because design-build has received various thoughts on its use and application and process, and the County Engineers Association, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Minnesota Intercounty Association have all been working on this issue for counties to have this authority. And we've been working with groups, the Association of General Contractors, and other contracting firms to perfect the process. And we feel that this delete-all, which incorporates the process that it will be, you'll be seeing in the Hortman bill, I believe this committee will be hearing tomorrow, is a refinement of the process accepted by agency and by the contracting community to refine the method of design build to a way that the industry accepts it and the agencies can administer it. So we're excited about the opportunity to have design build authority, and we do support this bill. We feel also that this adds another tool in our toolbox in delivering infrastructure projects and enables us to, as we move projects along, to seize opportunities as it presents itself, and we feel that this would be a good candidate for that. So just here to say that we support the bill, and hopeful that it is enacted.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. And please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, my name is Bob Ramsey. I'm the mayor of Ramsey.
Welcome to our committee, Mr.
Thank
Ramsey.
Thank you. No jokes about Ramsey for Ramsey. Anyway, I'll be brief. This project here, we were initially going to put $5 million into this intersection anyway, similar to what we did on Sunfish and Ramsey Boulevard. And as I was campaigning, talking to people and thinking about this, I thought it would be prudent to look at a bridge interchange here instead of just this grade-to-grade crossing and improving that. The real issue with this, obviously, is our town center, and now that we've finally gotten that resolved, it appears we would be able to move this project forward much easier with this interchange. Also, there's a public safety aspect to this. It's always been an issue in the city of Ramsey with our fire and police department that, you know, when they get a call, most of the time, especially the fire department, they're the first person that gets to the fire station is supposed to go to the crossing that they have to, if they have to cross the railroad tracks, they have to get there and look for trains so they can route the resources in the proper direction. And there's been times that train will stop sometimes there and it'll completely block an intersection. And so it is somewhat of a public safety issue. But the big thing is just to have this bridge. It's more of a tool. The design build aspect of this is just another tool in our toolbox. I don't know for sure if we'd end up actually using it, but, you know, funding becomes available and we find that there's maybe another project that we're looking at that we can incorporate. Maybe it would be feasible for the city to move forward on this. The last thing, too, a minor thing in my opinion, but it still is an issue, is, you know, we're looking to try to connect our two regional parks, one being on the north end of Ramsey, one being on the south end of Ramsey, and we'd have to go across that railroad track, and there is no bridge there. This bridge would be able to have an opportunity to be able to have that trail to get across that railroad track so it's not at grade. And with that, I stand for any questions.
All right. Members, do you have any questions? Yeah, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Burris, Representative Beard has a cleanup bill on the design build based on the 35W bridge. Is this compatible with that possible bill? Because I would assume that would pass because it's a cleanup and Representative Beard is not on this committee.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, that bill, I believe it's House File 1815, but correct me if I'm wrong, that bill makes changes to MnDOT's design build process. And the pilot project that's created under the delete all amendments here is works independently. There are a number of similarities in the contracting process, but the two don't conflict with each other because they're one doesn't rely on the other. They're separate processes.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to point out to Mr. Fisher that in the event this is used by counties, you better be aware that this is not compatible, not totally, I don't mean compatible, but it's not the same as the MnDOT design build. So I presume in the process that the MnDOT design build would be the one that would be applicable down the road. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can't imagine this one would be just the design build portion.
Thank you, Representative Leader. I would like to ask if MnDOT or if there is anyone else who would like to comment on this bill at this time. Representative Colbert,
thank you. Madam Chair, so I'm trying to figure out if this process is in line with MnDOT or not, which sounds like you're going to make a couple stops and probably come back to finance from the sounds of that. But my question is actually to the local officials. Are you going to use this process to enable you to apply for federal funds under the stimulus package?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, that was not the intent with this. This is I'm a new mayor. We have a new council. We have a failed town center that was obviously a $35 million project that was obviously missing a $25 million bridge. And in order for us to move forward on this as quickly as possible, this was just another tool that we thought we could use to get this. But it had nothing to do with the stimulus necessarily. Obviously, we take advantage of that if something was to come down with it.
Well,
but,
Madam Chair, that's my concern, that if we only give one entity this tool and it allows them to expedite a project that then makes them qualify for federal stimulus package and nobody else has it, so I don't know if that's a valid concern or not, but as this bill moves through, it certainly would be nice. I wouldn't want to be put in a position where we give one entity an advantage over everybody else in seeking federal funds.
Thank you, Representative Colbert. Any comments related to that, Mr. Fisher?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Colbert. This project was not submitted as a stimulus project, and again, the projects outstate have already been selected in the metro area. All the projects that are even considered at this point are well in the pipeline, and this project is not part of that solicitation. And this project still has the preliminary and the environmental, which has to be done by the agencies before it can even elevate to the design build level. We're just at this time building tools, putting tools in the toolbox, and prepping a project for something that might happen years from now.
And Madam Chair, there may be subsequent rounds of federal money available, and so I'm well aware of what the current situation is, but moving forward, I'm just trying to make sure that the playing field is even.
We have someone who has joined us here. Would you like to identify yourself, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Tim Warkey. I'm the Highway Division Director for the Associated General Contractors. We are the state's largest trade association of highway and general contractors. And we have been at the forefront of this design build discussion in the state since the early 2000s. The AGC initiated what is now the MnDOT statute for design build. We've worked closely with representatives of the local government, both the counties and the municipalities, on the approach that I think is part of the delete all amendment here. and Representative Abler's bill. And so a couple of issues that we like to point out on design builds, namely with respect to introducing this process to the local government level. It's important to us as contractors that there be a consistent process, one process, if you will. And as we've tried to work, represented in the Delete All Amendment, imploring the local governments to use the base level MnDOT statute to become the vehicle for allowing local units of government into this world of design build, which can be very complex and also cumbersome at times. I think, and I haven't had a chance to really look at it closely, but with respect to the amendment, I did not see, and someone can correct me if it's in there, we want to be insistent that it's, first of all, it's a two-stage process which the amendment accomplishes, a request for qualifications and then a request for proposals. But between those two processes, we want it made clear that you cannot shortlist to one. If five teams submit their qualifications, more than one team needs to be shortlisted to the second process, which is to propose on the project. And the reason for that is if you shortlist to one, then basically you're dealing with one proposer and price and other elements become a dicey situation. You're at the mercy of the proposer, and the relationships get skewed a little bit with respect to price. Also, I see that there is an accommodation for requiring a stipulated fee, which is what's commonly referred to as a stipend. We would be insistent that the local unit must provide for a stipend, and that's to protect that if a local unit of government puts out a proposal under one of these under this framework, that firms actually will bid or propose, because there is a significant amount of cost in putting these proposals together that is incurred by the proposing team. And if there is not a possibility to recoup some of those costs, and I say some of those costs, then you are likely not to get anyone to propose. So you could have a party and no one could show. So the insistence that the stipulated fee must be included is another element that we would ask that be part of the bill. Lastly, if I could, one other thing with respect to a question that came about the legislation that Representative Beard has that relates to the MnDOT trunk highway design-build process. There are some elements in that proposal that will come before this committee, I believe, tomorrow night, that we will pledge to work with the local units of government, Representative Abler, Representative Portman on her bill, that those critical elements that are providing for change in that bill are also, not in total, but some of them be lifted and incorporated into this bill as well. So that's my remarks. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you. I believe Representative Portman has a question.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to make a comment. We've been working on this proposed pilot project structure of the bill that I'll have before you tomorrow night. And part of the reason for moving so carefully is that design build, though it worked very quickly and very effectively with the 35W bridge after collapse, was a very unique situation there. And in some cases, it works very well. But there are some dangers that because it's not a low bid situation, it opens up the potential for picking, you know, not this mayor's friend, but some mayor's friend, or having not qualified bidders, you know, submitting bids for the job. And it also, there's an element of subjective criteria. And so since we're allocating the expenditures of taxpayer dollars, we have to make sure that we're not allowing a process to come into place that could steer taxpayer dollars in one specific direction or another. And the county engineer from Anoka has been central in playing a role in developing the other legislation. So I'm unclear at this point really if this conflicts with what we're doing in the other bill, or if it's necessary considering the work that we're doing in the other bill. But I do want to caution members, I'm no expert on design build, and it sounds great and it sounds simple up front, but there's some factors we just have to look at very carefully before we make a decision about whether it's the right process for counties and cities.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I was like to ask Representative Portman. Representative Portman, is your bill project specific?
Representative Portman.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, no, my bill would create a board in conjunction with MnDOT to allow projects to be submitted so that the folks at MnDOT who've worked on design-build projects could work with the county and city officials to make sure that the appropriate type of projects are being selected. So it would be a competitive situation. It wouldn't decide certain projects were okay, but they would apply and go through a process.
Representative Abler, we have an A1 amendment. Are you ready to move that amendment?
I'm ready to hear you move it, ma'am. Actually, Representative Mason's going to offer it, I think.
Representative Mason, would you like to move
the
A1? Oh.
I can move both. A2 is my bill. Do you want me to do mine first, or do Representative Abler's at the same time?
Well, let's do the design build part, and then we'll do my part at the end. That would be
all right.
Whatever you like. I'll just tell you what, as you wish, Madam Chair. Which do you prefer?
Okay, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the amendment A2, and essentially what this does is give Dakota County the same ability that the bill is giving Anoka, and I have talked with Representative Abler about this.
Are there any questions related to this amendment before we...
Madam Chair?
Representative Abler.
This should actually allay some of Representative Holbert's concerns. It's only for one group, so now it's for two. And this makes it twice as good. And I think to the... She's my classmate, Madam Chair. But then to the Representative Holbert's thought about the project, I think the fact that now you have a two-for-one bill here and the project Representative Holbert has and the Representative Beard work that's going on, is there's a lot of interest in this. And I think from our point of view, don't know what bills are going to survive the process. And it may well be if Representative Hortman's work, you know, fails on, then this becomes moot. But I guess we just don't know that with all, you know. And so that's why this is here. It's meant to be a full respect to the work of Representative Hortman, and we've incorporated exactly all the words we can of hers into this. And if Mr. Workey has other concerns, we're going to be incorporating those as this bill moves along. So. And it just seems sense to, if it's in Anoka County, Dakota County is a comparable size, and I'm not sure you want a little county doing this, but these are both pretty good sized counties. So it's a friendly amendment to me, Madam Chair.
Any other comments related to the amendment? Oh, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm concerned. The compatibility, we're talking about other bills being here, and we're going to move this bill. I'd like to ask Mr. Burris, if this bill were to pass, and tomorrow bills are passing, how is this one bill, how do we determine which is the bill that's going forward, really? There's been some comment about, by the author, and maybe by one of the other representatives, that this is going to happen, and I'm a little concerned. We actually have two separate bills, two design builds separate. I see this, the bill that Representative Abler has, does it not have a couple components that are in a MnDOT design bill, like he pointed out, the stipend is one thing, the composition of the technical committee is different, and apparently Representative Hortman's bill addresses that, so I'm wondering how we can... Which bill passes first and what's going to happen? I mean, what's going to be the prevailing statute?
Mr. Burris, good luck.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader and members, there are essentially three bills before the committee in the upcoming days, and one is this one. This bill and Representative Hortman's bill are quite similar. They're both pilots, and they both establish essentially the same process as far as procedures for contracting and steps that local units of government and design-build firms have to take in the design-build contracting process. The distinction between them is, as amended, this bill specifies today's bill specifies two specific projects that would be done using this pilot process, and Representative Portman's bill would establish a council that would select a set of projects. The third bill, Representative Beard's, does cleanups or change modifications, to the MnDOT design build process, stands essentially independently and in parallel. That's a process that MnDOT has under current law and is in statute, and would be a modification to that process. Both of these bills would be pilot programs that have some similarities to as far as being design build and having some sets of similar contracting elements, but would work independently. Essentially, all three bills could be enacted by the legislature. The enactment of Representative Beard's bill would modify the contracting process for MnDOT. The enactment of both of these bills would create a set of pilot projects, some determined by council and two specifically determined by the legislature. All of those pilot projects would follow the same process. The language in both of those is essentially the same as to the process under as amended currently.
Any other comments or questions from the committee?
On the
A2
amendment?
On the A2 amendment. No. All right. Are we ready to vote then? All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Can we go to the A1 amendment? I guess Representative Mason, you're going to move that one as well? Is that correct?
Madam Chair,
oh,
I might.
Tomorrow? Okay.
Only because I had a road-specific bill last night, I agreed with Representative Abler that I would move his A1 amendment.
Thank you. And I'll be brief. And members, on the whole bill project that we've done, it's actually kind of nice to get to hold it till after you hear Representative Hartman's work, and then the committee will decide if it chooses to move it on, and I kind of hope they do, but that'll be a decision to be made after that. This is a separate project entirely. This is one member trying to help their town with inadequate roads to make them stretch as effectively as possible. I've worked with MnDOT and my local guy, actually Mr. Pavko even, back in the day, to maximize our striping of our lanes, and it's unusual to suggest this, but this would really help my negotiations with MnDOT if you could, and if this could be adopted. I will predict that it may not become law quite in its form, but it will show my earnestness in the dialogue, and I expect that even by the time it gets to civil, whatever this thing goes next, that we may have some agreement. So I would appreciate your support of this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Abler. I'm wondering if the department has any comment on the striking.
I appreciate the help, Adam.
All right. Representative Leader, since you have a question, and I don't see anyone from the department coming in.
Madam Chair, I think we should have MnDOT comment. Here we're micromanaging, we're saying shall, and they've got criteria that determines how you stripe a road and where you stripe it, and this is designating something. I think I'd like to have MnDOT, because it appears to me that Representative Abler, this is not good policy. We're doing something here that we shouldn't do. I'd like to have Representative Holbert comment on this.
Representative Holbert.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess, we saw the first, some may say earmarking, some may not, in the transportation bill last year, but for many, many years around here, the Transportation Committee didn't do those things. We didn't call out particular projects. We set standards and policies, let everybody compete on an equal ground. We're using committee time to do these kinds of things. Maybe other people aren't busy, but I am one legislator that thinks that it's much healthier for the state as a whole if we as a committee concentrate on policies and bills that set standards across the entire state and not spend time on bills that do these kinds of things, especially during deadline week.
Your comments are well advised, and I do appreciate them, because we have now spent 25 minutes on this bill. So I am going to follow up, though, with Representative Leader, who did request that somebody from the department comment. So Mr. Peterson or someone?
Over there.
For the record, I'm Eric Burdeen with MnDOT Government Affairs.
Welcome, Mr. Burdeen.
Thank you. We're not familiar with the situation that's addressed in the amendment, but obviously, as a general policy, we feel that the department is better equipped to decide how to stripe our highways than a legislative committee, with all due respect. You know, there could be important safety reasons why the highway is not striped in this manner. And I think we would, at a minimum, want to gather some additional information from our metro district before, you know, before we could agree to implementing the striping.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Burdeen. We appreciate your comments. Representative Aver, do you have anything?
Well, madam, I'm just a very frustrated member, madam. We have, like, no lanes out there. Highway 47 is on, like, the 40-year list that they don't have. And so I've been going around and around, and if Mr. Rudine and others will be happy to keep talking to me, I don't need to pass the law. But I'm frustrated as all you can be. The engineers that they have work in a laboratory. When they restripe the exits coming off Highway 10 to 47, traffic is backed up on the freeway. That wasn't in their laboratory plan. And so I worked with Mr. Roy, who was very accommodating, and other people, and they fixed the thing. But I just would like MnDOT staff to know that the world isn't a laboratory. It's in real life, and it's roads we know as members. And if they were wise, they would watch where people drive, and they would listen to the people who live out there who represent the people. So I don't want to put the committee, I have great respect for the leader. I'm not sure if I have the votes or not. I think I do, but I'm going to just suggest that ask you to withdraw the amendment, and I will talk to them more, if that's all right.
Madam Chair, I would withdraw the A1 amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, madam. And I appreciate the committee's attention, and it just was not a frivolous effort, but I will continue to work with them, if that's all right. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And let's see, Representative, who moves the
the bill held over then for
yeah. Okay, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion. It's being laid over.
Oh, yeah, I do. Try to catch it for you.
No, that's good. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay, forget it.
Yeah. This isn't written. Oh. All right, this will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. And now I would like to have Representative Hawes, House File 572. Do you want to take over? Welcome, Representative Hawes. Would you like me to move your bill, House File 572?
It has to be introduced, but Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hawes, please explain your bill.
I would like to do that before I explain the bill. I would like to do an oral amendment to put it in the shape that the author would like.
Absolutely. Representative Hawes, what would you like?
Well, it's on a little diet. I would like to delete lines 3-3, 3-5, and 3-6.
All right. In order to get this bill in the shape that Representative Hawes would like, I move that we delete lines 3-4, 3-5, and 3-6. All those in favor, say aye.
Right.
Three. What did you say, Representative?
Somebody had a real hard time with the numbering system on my bill, but my bill says 3-3 through 3-6.
All right. Four lines would be deleted. Lines 3-3.36. All those in favor, please say aye. Any opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. Now, please explain the bill as.
Thank you much, Madam Chair, committee members. The bill was originally evolved from requests from public safety individuals in the area that I come from, the St. Cloud area, saying they thought that they could improve and save some veterans some problems if they could identify them early, if that information was on the driver's license. After dealing with them two or three times, if they knew they were veterans, they might have been able to get them into the right direction. So they asked that a bill be drafted. The bill was drafted on the Senate side, came to the House side, and it prescribed that by volunteer, any veteran could have that information put on his driver's license. There is also a note with this that I would like to try to talk the people into reducing and doing it at a time when it wouldn't be costly. The ongoing amount is only $2,000. The initial amount, I think, was $155,000. But that note is there, and we're still trying to convince people that timing should reduce that down to do it when it doesn't cost us dollars to change the driver's license, because we're not overly concerned. I have two testifiers here this evening. If they would like to speak a few minutes on this bill, they would introduce themselves and testify if you so wish, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Would you please identify yourself, Colonel?
Oh, okay. Christine Kyle? Christine Field, Department of Veterans Affairs, and we are just here to lend support for the bill. Again, as Representative Haas said, it would be voluntary for them to mark veteran on the license, but we feel this will help identify some of the issues that may be coming up if they are stopped due to speeding or something like that. So we're just here to lend our support to the bill.
All right, thank you very much. And Colonel?
Chair Lieutenant Colonel Barbara O'Reilly, Minnesota National Guard, Director of Deployment Cycle Support. And the Department of Military Affairs also then supports this bill. We feel that, first of all, it provides access for veterans to receive the many benefits that they are entitled to receive. So one, a gateway to benefits. And two, it additionally provides safety, a measure of safety for law enforcement. Whenever a law enforcement officer has more information on an individual, they know better how to deal with that person. And so this provides them the information that they need to know if the person is acting strangely or something, that they're a veteran and may need referral to additional resources, or if it can be a form of mentorship as well.
All right. Thank you so much. And I believe that I saw you out at Oakland Junior High a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, ma'am.
The Lieutenant Colonel is helping to start a Yellow Ribbon County program in Washington County, and I think he's modeling it after what's happening in Representative Holberg's county, so I think that's really great. So, we have some questions. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers, this issue is actually not a new issue for me. A local veteran asked me about designating or putting a designation on the driver's license, and so I made some initial inquiries, and I called my county veteran service officers and asked them. I said, if we were to put a designation on the driver's license, would it be a benefit to you? And essentially what the individuals told me at the time was, if we put a designation on the driver's license, it's just going to tell us that they're a veteran. We're still going to have to ask for all of their papers, the normal paperwork that we have to ask for, because there's a lot of information on their discharge papers that tell us what we need. And really the conversations didn't go too much further than that. I guess I'm trying to figure out, if we were to implement this, besides stating that the person is a veteran, what other information is going to be on there that's going to be helpful? Is this really going to cut down on administration? I just need to know, since I've talked to some of my local county veteran service officers, what benefits this will be.
Representative House.
Madam Chair. Representative. The merit to this is not to the veteran service officer. The veteran service officer already knows that he's dealing with a veteran, and he also can provide those programs. The merit to this is the police officer or the person in the mission that's volunteering that happens to can catch this, that they're dealing with a veteran, and they may be able to refer him or her to the veteran service officer, who then can help and start providing that service either from his office or from the VA or from wherever it happens to be. So it isn't the connect to the veteran service officer, it's the catch from the safety person, from the mission, from the volunteer that recognizes this is a veteran, and there might be some behavior here that is veteran-related or war-related or whatever it happens to be, and they can get that person easily to that point. At some time, I think there will be some very positive direct benefits also that a testifier might want to include, but I can see it. I used to go through as a volunteer in the mission and go through and ask, are you a veteran? Are you a veteran? Are you a veteran? And I'm going to get you over to the Veteran Service Office. I've even done it on the cardboard shacks. Are you a veteran? Are you a veteran? Are you a veteran? So now what we have is a potential for a police officer, a volunteer, to catch that immediately, and if it's connected to a behavior that they're concerned about, getting it into the right spot to get some help. So that's where the benefit is at, in my opinion, and there's probably some direct benefits also.
Representative Erdahl, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that there may be circumstances where businesses provide benefits, and it'd be a much simple matter just to have it on the license and show it. How many veterans do you anticipate might be involved in this?
Representative Haas.
I have no idea. I would ask testifiers if you do.
Ms. Steele. Madam Chair, Representative Riddell, we don't know how many employees participate, but there are 410,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, would there be any additional cost for the reissue of a license plate with this notation on there? I didn't mean plate.
It's on the driver's, Madam Chair, committee. A representative. I get used to being a county commissioner and get out of my system. Right now, there is a note, and we're trying to get that note reduced because I think if they do it at a timely manner, that should take it all the way on down. My understanding is if it went on, this is a fee-based activity, and there would have to be a fee. But this hasn't been totally negotiated yet. I would like to get it smaller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry, I misspoke with plate, I meant license. I'd just like to commend you, Representative Haas, for the various veterans pieces of legislation we've brought forward the last few years. I think it's much needed. And one other comment, I would like to compliment you on your color of the jacket, because I've been told it takes a real man to wear heliotrope.
Representative Haas, I'm sure you want to respond to that.
I actually do. My mother dresses me, so if we have a complaint, you're going to have to insult Mama.
All right. Any other questions so we can keep moving? Representative Haas.
Thanks, Senator. I just wanted to clarify something I thought I heard Ms. Steele say. You didn't mean to suggest law enforcement would have two standards of treatment of veterans versus anyone else.
Ms. Steele.
Madam Chair and Representative House, no, you're correct. I did not mean to suggest that. It's just, if they catch someone driving erratically, it might, instead of holding them responsible and giving a speeding ticket, it might also prompt them to say, maybe you should go to so-and-so and seek help. Is there a reason why there's a speeding happening or something like that? But not to excuse behavior or dismiss any behavior.
All right. If you don't mind, members, I really, because of the press of bills that we have, I think that this will be heard in Transportation Finance because of the fiscal note, and we can have a further vetting of those issues. So, the motion is that we recommend to pass and re-refer to the Transportation Finance Committee. All those, as amended, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Madam Chair, thank you.
And it's lovely to see you again, Lieutenant Brown.
Thank you. And Madam Chair and Representatives, I can just thank you for your continued support of the veterans in Minnesota.
It's our pleasure. We're very proud. All right. The next bill that we will be hearing is House File 1672, Representative Jim Dabney. Representative Dabney, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair. Good evening, members.
Right.
I just need to make sure I don't pull out the liquor bill for the Commerce Committee here, so give me just a moment.
All right. Would you like me to move House File 1672?
If you would, please, Madam Chair.
The Chair moves House File 1672 to be held over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, there is a 0177 amendment that is not coded as, but is a delete all amendment.
All right. I'll move that for you as well. The chair moves A090177. Would you please speak to your bill?
Is there going to be a vote on the
motion? Oh, we have to vote on amendments. Yes. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. Amendment is adopted. Now you may speak to your
bill. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good evening. I have with me today a host of Minneapolis staff, Mr. Mosing from the City's Public Works Department, Ms. Heng from the City Attorney's Office, and Lieutenant Nelson from Downtown Precinct to the Minneapolis Police Department. Here today to talk about an effort to keep traffic moving in downtown Minneapolis, particularly during those popular special events and those unpopular snowstorms. The City has worked hard with all of the downtown partners to ensure that traffic moves as best it can during rush hour and during special events. We understand that getting people successfully in and out of the city's downtown core is vital to the health of our downtown and to the many businesses that call Minneapolis home. However, this effort is sometimes impeded by drivers who have not responded to the messages to not block the box. In other words, drivers who attempt to cross an intersection without adequate room on the other side get caught in the intersection, not only blocking cross traffic and impeding traffic then throughout the area, but also creating a very unsafe situation for pedestrians who have to attempt to cross the street and must move either behind or even between idling vehicles. You'll see this illustrated in the handout that I believe was in members' packet. House File 1672 then is narrowly crafted legislation to provide a moving violation for drivers who interfere with cross traffic by blocking the intersection. This sort of don't block the box initiative was an early action by then Mayor Giuliani of New York as part of his way of getting a handle on traffic in downtown Manhattan. And creating gridlock not only creates problems in the intersection, but can have a ripple effect on traffic as across the grid as traffic snarls. Everyone wins if drivers respect the ability of cross traffic to move unimpeded. With that, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, I was chatting with the chair.
You know, Madam Chair, you are bringing out the school teacher in me.
Yeah, I hear you.
Ms. Heng from the City of Minneapolis City Attorney's Office.
All right, please identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Ellen Heng. I'm an assistant Minneapolis City Attorney.
Welcome to our committee. Please continue with your testimony.
I was approached by actually Mayor Ryback's staff to address this issue and kind of talk about what we could do to possibly cite people who are doing this behavior. And when I took a close look at this law, what I realized is the existing law, which is now would be codified if this passes in Subdivision 1, doesn't actually fit the behavior. The law is written that you're impeding traffic at driving at a slow speed. Well, these drivers are not driving at any speed. They're literally parked in the intersection, and so we discussed making a simple amendment that would actually create language that would fit the type of behavior that we're talking about. So that's the purpose why we brought this language. It would be a petty misdemeanor violation that would go through the court system like any other violation.
Thank you very much. And would you identify yourself, please?
Madam Chair, Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. I'll just add one thing, and we have some other folks here that could answer questions. We didn't want to do this absent of a public campaign. We're not interested in just going out and willy-nilly ticketing people who happen to do this. Our thought was to continue but actually ramp up our public campaign before any enforcement would happen. I mean, our goal is not to write tickets, but our goal is to get compliance and to keep traffic moving through downtown.
Right. Thank you very much. Are there others in the audience who would like to speak to this amendment? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Just on the actual enforcement of the violation, would you, since they're parked, are you going to walk up and ticket them on foot? Would there be a squad car? Would it create greater traffic concerns?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I think we've got expertise in the room.
Yes, I
appreciate you being here. Have a seat, please, so we can get your voice on the tape.
In reference to your question, sir, there'd be a variety of methods of handling that. In critical traffic times such as rush hour or special events or emergency vehicle operations, trying to get calls, fire calls, ambulance calls, the individual that would be blocking the intersection would be pulled over to the side, either by a beat officer who happens to be at that location or by a trailer squad who's following the vehicles going to the call.
All right, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering what the penalty or fine for this moving violation would be.
Representative McFarland, members of the committee, it would be the typical moving violation, the same as a speeding ticket. That fine currently is set at $147. That includes the fine plus the mandated surcharges that go to the court and the other fees that are assessed. It might be a little bit less. Other committees will set that fine, but it will be within the petty misdemeanor range. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Representative Holder.
Thank you. And I'm just concerned about the crosswalk issue, that if you are, let's say you want to make a right-hand turn or whatever, is it going to be necessary that you stay all the way behind the crosswalk area? Usually you have to pull up and then stop and then to be able to see to make your movement. And so the way I read this, because it says cross traffic or pedestrians, are you including crosswalks in this?
Crosswalks, by the letter of the law, have to remain clear for pedestrians. During non-rush hour traffic, people generally cheat up into that crosswalk if there's no pedestrians there in order to get a good view to make that right-hand turn on red or things of that scenario. We're not interested in that. What we are concerned about is special events, rush hour traffic, emergency vehicle response, those types of situations where the gridlock basically makes it impossible for us to get traffic moving. It affects not just the intersection that's blocked up, but several blocks down.
And I understand that, but our job as legislators is to make sure that the words we put in the books aren't misinterpreted. And if you are sitting waiting to go a certain way and take a right-hand turn, at that point, the traffic that's perpendicular to you, the pedestrian traffic, does not have the right-of-way.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to stay there. And so you need to pull up, and you, at that point, generally, if you're driving anything but a little teeny car, your vehicle is actually in the pedestrian crosswalk.
The green light, you're clear to cross that pedestrian walk.
Right, but if you are allowed a right turn on red, are you saying that you cannot move forward?
That has the right-of-way.
Even when they don't have, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, even when they don't have the green light?
If you're making a right turn on red,
and
the pedestrians have the right of way.
And Madam Chair, I'm talking about the pedestrian crosswalk that's perpendicular to your car, not parallel to your car.
Any comment to that? Perpendicular one.
You're referring to, if you're making a right-hand turn, the pedestrian traffic to your right. Am I correct there?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just asking, if this bill becomes a law and it says you cannot block pedestrian movement, even though the pedestrian doesn't have the right to move into that area at that point in time, okay, are you as a car allowed to move into that area?
Ma'am, if you're making a right turn on a red light, the pedestrians, you have a red light. The pedestrians have the walkway. They have that crossing.
I feel like we need a diagram.
I got it.
He's got it. So the pedestrians in front of your car have the right of way. The ones crossing the street in the same direction as your car is facing do not have
that. That is correct.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, is that helping?
No, Madam Chair, that's not helping me at all, because that's opposite to what I believe the law is. I know that you have to stop to allow those guys to, cross the street. Okay? Okay.
Thank you.
But I'm moving the same direction you are. So this is my situation. The light turns green, there's total gridlock in front, okay? And you want to pull up because you're going to go to the right and you're going to wait for the people that are crossing on the green light. But you're going to be sitting in the crosswalk to the people that have the red light, and they're not supposed to be in there anyway way at that point. Can you do that under this bill?
Representative Dabney.
I'm looking at the attorneys and the police officers.
Well, in the meantime, I would like to comment on everybody's beautiful interpretive dancing skills. That was
thank
quite
you, yeah.
Lovely.
So,
and ma'am, so is this going to civil?
I don't believe so.
I believe it will go to
the crime or
hold over for possible
and then for in the interest of time. In the interest of time, let's just lay it over. But I just want to make sure that we're not have unintended consequences here, because at times motorists do need to transverse across a pedestrian crossway that's not active in order to keep moving.
Well, I...
Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney?
In communications with the Chair of Public Safety, I know he is not interested in seeing the bill.
Thank you for that. And I am going to ask you to have a conversation with Representative Holbrook to address her concerns, and if they have merit, then I do want that to be addressed as we consider the bill when we're
Madam Chair, I think we do have one point of clarification, and
yes,
that is, as I understand it, and she'll hit me in the arm if I'm wrong, under current law, if you're wishing to make a right turn on red, you are not allowed to block the pedestrian crosswalk.
That is correct, Madam Chair. That is my current understanding. We all know that there's discretion in law enforcement, and I think that that drivers use this behavior, and they do creep into the crosswalk to make a safe, legal turn on red, but I do believe that behavior under the current law would be actually illegal, and they could be ticketed. My assumption would be that they probably would not be if they're not impeding any pedestrian traffic, but I think that behavior is actually covered already in an existing law, and this does not impact that at all.
All right. Well, thank you for your comments, and Representative Dabney, we will be considering this bill for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Latino, the app. Okay, so at this time, we're going to change the order just a little bit. Representative Graskowski, House File 836. All the way from Wabasha. Okay, Representative Graskowski, would you like for me to move your bill for you?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Is it in the state you want it? That's the magic question of the night.
Madam Chair, members, it is. As a matter of fact, Madam Chair, I understand that you're planning to hold this over, and then we're gonna look at Representative Scott's bill.
That's correct.
And my bill, and try to get one that'll work together.
That's correct.
Okay. Really, I think the value, Madam Chair, is to hear the testimony relating to the issue that this bill attempted to address.
All right. Thank you, Representative Jaskowski. We will move House File 836, and it would be, this says placed on the general register or possible inclusion. Do you know which? Placed on the general. Okay, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So, would you like to introduce your testifier, Trustee?
I will. Before I do, Madam Chair, just quickly, those of you on the committee knowing transportation the way you do, this bill deals with Section 169.14 that deals with a residential district or an area that has a density of houses every 300 feet. But what we're talking about is a street that happens to be less than a quarter of a mile in total length. So the township board, because of that, does not have the ability or the authority, as communicated to them by the department, to adjust the speed limit to 30 miles an hour or another suitable speed limit. So that's the reason for the bill, and I'll introduce to you Mr. Hal Becker from Greenfield Township in Waukesha County.
Welcome, Mr. Becker.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, other members. As Representative Zaskowski said, we live in Greenview Township. That's south of Waukesha, and it's a beautiful area, full of resources, wildlife resources, and a great place to live. We moved there 4 years ago in a retired situation, and we love the area. We live on 670th Street, and as you look at the map, it's a short street in yellow. The road, as we're facing 670th Street, the road to the right is a 55 mile per hour zoned county road. So people entering 670th Street assume that that street is also 55 miles an hour because there is no different speed zoning, a speed sign or a speed limit sign. And many people are driving for time or driving for a living, delivery trucks, UPS trucks, speedy delivery trucks. Everybody's in a hurry. This street has approximately 5,000 events on it a year. And an event I'm calling a child on a bicycle, a lady pushing a baby buggy with the baby in it, of course, hikers, adults jogging, and so forth. In addition to that, this is a rural residential area. We don't have sidewalks. We don't have bike lanes. In fact, we have a crushed rock road, which significantly increases stopping distances of vehicles in an emergency, if there is one. But here we are. We're in a Neverland. We're in a street, an area, which there are probably hundreds of them in the state of Minnesota that's less than a quarter mile long, and according to the statute 169.14, it can't have a speed limit sign put on it. So what we're asking, and we hope that this bill will rectify the situation, is that we could be included with other state highways, county roads, even alleys and streets have speed limits. And we would hope that we can rectify the situation by getting 30 mile an hour speed limits or something comparable to that on all rural residential streets, regardless of their length.
All right. Let's
I rest you, my case. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quickly, one comment that kind of piques my interest here is there are hundreds of these across the state. Are we going to be looking at changing speed limits in hundreds of townships? And Representative Jaskowski, are we looking at possible revenue enhancements in these townships having to pay for all of this?
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair,
Representative Erdahl. Actually, the intention here is to give the township board the authority to choose if they would like to define one of these as a 30 mile an hour zone. So, in terms of Mr. Becker's testimony, would give the ability to make that call to the township board in those areas, and we don't look to mandate it or have a shell or anything like that in there.
Follow up, Representative Erdahl.
So, Representative Jaskowski, you don't see that this would cause any tax increases or anything in the township?
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see that depending on the particular township board, it could, or actually the arrangement that is beginning to take place between the residents along this particular street that Mr. Becker lives on in the township board is possible because the township was concerned about the cost. And there's even discussion about maybe the residents along the road providing for the cost of the signage in order to make it happen and not provide additional cost to the township.
Any other questions, members? Anybody in the audience would like to testify? All right. Hearing none, then the chair renews her motion that Representative Drazkowski's House File 836 will be included for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, if I might, I am a freshman. This is my first time testifying in the committee, and I understand that to avoid hazing.
I
think you're the first one who.
Thank you, Representative Scott. I was just sitting here thinking how hungry I was. So that's lovely. So we will definitely include your bill.
That's part of the package.
Well, welcome, and I hope that you enjoy being in front of the policy committee. So would you like to explain your bill?
Well, first of all, I'd like to move an A1 amendment. I think everybody should have that in their package.
I will do that for you.
Okay.
Let me get my paperwork correct. All right. In order to get this in the shape that Representative Scott would like, the chair will move H1421A1. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my bill, I'm requesting that we hold that over. We're going to be working with the township to rectify a few minor details of the bill, and we should have something ready by Friday on that. So if we could hold it over until then. As a resident and representative of an area in our state that has experienced rapid growth over the past 10 to 15 years, I can clearly understand the need for this bill. This bill helps cities make the streets and roadways safer for its citizens by redefining technical definitions of rural residential district and residential roadway and the speed limits pursuant to these definitions. A new type of development has occurred in rural areas that created a need for a speed limit lower than 55 miles an hour. In essence, there is a void in statute to address appropriate speed limits in these rural residential districts. Today, traveling down these roads at 55 miles an hour is a traffic hazard. This bill keeps pace with the times. In 2007, a task force was formed by the legislature to study this very issue. Representatives from cities, counties, and MnDOT came together to study this dilemma. The task force, along with input and consultation from law enforcement, came up with solutions that would remedy the now unsafe speed limits in such rapid growth areas. Madam Chair, now I have testimony from Bernie Aronson, who is the Division Director for MnDOT Policy, Safety, and Strategic Initiatives, and he's going to elaborate a little bit more on what the findings of the task force were.
All right. Before we do that, we were so excited about Candy that we needed to vote on the amendment.
Oh, I'm going
to
do that real quickly.
Okay. Mr. Byrd?
Madam Chair and members, I just noticed a couple of technical issues with the amendment. So I'd recommend a couple of changes, and I'll take credit for both making the error and finding it if candy that cancels out.
Give him an extra piece of candy. All right, Mr. Burr.
Madam Chair, members, on 1.3 of the amendment, it should be strike instead of delete. So it would be page 1, line 3 of the amendment, delete and insert strike, and page 1, line 5 of the amendment, delete and insert strike, so that it reads on 1.5, page 1, line 10, strike everything before the period.
All right. The chair will just incorporate those changes into the amendment, and members, if you are ready to vote, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. All right. Please forgive us for that little bit of technical work and introduce yourself for the tape.
Yes, Madam Chair, members, my name is Bernie Arsenault. I'm the Director for the Policy, Safety, and Strategic Initiatives Division for MnDOT. What I'd like to do now is just quickly summarize for the committee this study as it relates and the outcomes of it as it relates to the bill in front of you today. You've got a handout in your packet, and I'll walk through that. The couple things that we needed to do relative to this bill is to look at to 30 miles an hour in rural residential districts is appropriate, and at 55 miles an hour in rural residential districts within a city is appropriate, and that's the gap that we referred to earlier. So we had to ultimately look at the definitions for rural residential district and residential roadway. In order to do this, we did convene a task force. We developed a collaborative process that included city engineers, county engineers, League of Minnesota Cities, and then, of course, MnDOT and its Office of Traffic Safety and Technology. Major tasks of the study were to look at data that's available, do some research and analysis on that data. We interviewed law enforcement from several agencies, and we had 9 task force meetings. The goal was to develop a consensus on the issues that were facing us. If we first look at residential roadway, the current definition of that allows streets with less than a half a mile, that are less than a half a mile, or a portion of a street that's less than a half a mile, to be signed at 25 miles an hour if adopted by the governing body and if the appropriate spacing exists. So the recommendation was to clarify this and identify exactly what we were looking for, because originally, although this is somewhat of a technical correction, it was never intended to address longer roads. It was really intended to address first quarter mile or less and then ultimately a half a mile or less roadways. So we have deleted, as you see in the slide there, for a portion of a street in order to bring that back to its original intent of being a short roadway. This is the provision that will be addressing the issues brought up by Representative Draskowski and Mr. Becker. If we move then to rural residential districts, this is where the gap exists in statutes, and this is the area that's very important to cities like Andover. As it sits today, urban districts are restricted to building spaces of 100 feet or less. So when you have homes or buildings with spacing of 100 feet or less on a roadway, the statutory speed limit is 30 miles an hour. However, when you have these new large lot divisions or subdivisions, those are not covered by current law under the 30 mile an hour provision because of the longer spacing, and therefore are technically a 55 mile an hour roadway. So this was where we had the problem, because we had these residential large lot developments that did not really accommodate a 55 mile an hour speed, and so our task force had to look at that. So given that the current definition was outdated, we identified new language that would incorporate the cities into the large lot developments to allow them to provide a speed that fits the environment better. And the ultimate speed that came up with was 35 miles an hour for those locations. Now that is a higher speed than the urban speeds, but it can be supported because of the density of those large lot developments. It's less dense, and based on our speed limit engineering, it can accommodate that higher speed, and yet also accommodate the safety issues that are related to these developments. So finally, the last thing, so we have reached through this collaborative process an outcome that is that meets the needs of the counties, that meets the needs of the cities. However, we do have one outstanding issue with the Minnesota Association of Townships. It is, I think, a relatively minor issue. I'm confident that we'll be able to address that, and we will be prepared after resolving that to bring forward a new bill on Friday.
All right, thank you. Would one of you like to speak now, or are you there to answer questions?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Identify yourself, please.
Dave Brookwood, City of Andover. I'm the city engineer.
Okay.
Bernie pretty much covered all the technical information and the basis for the task force. I just wanted to touch a little bit on the front line of calls when we deal with speed limit issues throughout the city. So included in your packet is an Andover city map. And as you can see in the southwest section of the city, it's an urban area, so it's 30 miles an hour per statute. And then as you go up towards the southeast is the urban, you go towards the northwest, it's more of a rural residential. You know, I receive a few phone calls a week on speed limits, and we have to tell those people that the statutory speed limit as it exists right now is 55 miles an hour. That is difficult for them to understand, and it's actually, to be honest with you, it's difficult to tell them that because of the safety concerns and things within that area, you know, with children playing and things like that. 55 miles an hour just does not meet that type of district, so... that's just the extent of what I wanted to discuss.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, please introduce yourself.
My name is Wayne Sandberg. I'm with Washington County Public Works, and I'm also here tonight to represent the Minnesota Counties Youth Association and to reaffirm our support for this bill as amended tonight, and also to commend Minnesota Department of Transportation for the process they've used, the very inclusive process to come to this bill. They have been listening. Our concerns have been addressed. And we also support holding over till Friday to work with the townships in a similar manner.
All right. Any questions from the members? All right. Seeing none, then the chair renews her motion that House File 1421, as amended, will be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Scott. Well done.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Demmer, are you in the audience? There he is. What did you bring us to eat, Representative Demmer? We're hungry.
Well,
okay, Representative Demmer will be has brought House File 1209, and it is recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. So, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just picked up on something to eat because I think this may be my first time in this committee for sure this year. But alas, I don't have treats. And, I'm sorry, Madam.
And you forgot the food. We won't forget that.
I don't. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. I appreciate the chance to bring before you House File 1209. This is an interesting issue that was brought to me, and it gets my attention primarily.
Can we have quiet, please? Thank you.
It got my attention because as a small business owner, I've been incorporated, and of course, that's kind of what you do when you're in small business. You form a corporation, you got the corporate veil, and you get your insurances and that sort of thing. And it's brought to my attention that we have businesses in the state of Minnesota that are incorporated, deputy registrars, and that in statute, there's a time frame in 2012 that says that you can no longer be incorporated and be a deputy registrar, and I found that very, very interesting. And after doing research, of course, we have lots of agencies and lots of businesses that are appointments in the by the state of Minnesota that are corporations. I found this to be quite fascinating. So I did do some checking on it, and indeed, as you'll hear in the testimony from Ms. Marty as well as Mr. Hurst, that this is not only as it doesn't seem right, but it could be a potential problem for the state of Minnesota. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll let people talk.
Thank you so much. Which one of you would like to go first? Ms. Hurst? Please state your name.
Hi, Madam Chair. My name is Linda Marty, and I'm a deputy registrar located in Casson, Minnesota, which is down by Rochester. I am one of 173 offices in the state, and I am one of 72 offices considered to be a private corporate deputy office in the state. I employ two part-time employees, and one of which is my husband. The state of Minnesota determined the need and location for deputy offices. By rule, the Department of Public Safety first approaches the county to establish a license bureau. The county has a right of refusal, which if exercised results in the department approaching the city for its consideration. Should the city also refuse, the state then appoints a private party to open the license bureau. There is no financial assistance from the state to open these offices, nor to maintain them after they have been established. The majority of private deputy offices, such as mine, are family-run businesses in rural America. We operate our license bureau at our own risk and at no cost to either the state or the local governments that have opted not to open these bureaus and assume this risk. Due to the volume of collections and the sensitive data that we deal with, we must secure cash bonds and assume all liability in accordance with state rules. Over the past few years, our responsibilities have expanded to include additional auditing tasks that require new training and certification, thus increasing our potential liability and bond should we overlook a lien on a title, for example. My office, like all private offices, is incorporated to protect myself and my family's investments like any responsible business owner would. However, language adopted in 1997 would ban my incorporation as well as other private deputies beginning in 2012, which would leave me without the protections afforded me from being incorporated. This also impacts my ability to sell my interest in my license bureau someday. After years of hard work, personal investment, and risk, I look forward to selling my deputy appointment as my primary retirement fund, since most license bureaus break even in their business activity annually. Such sales of private offices are not unique and require the Department of Public Safety to approve such in advance. I purchased my office in 1996 from the previous owner who was appointed. I should have the same ability someday to sell my license bureau. Without the repeal of this existing language, my office and others like it will eventually close. The replacement of these offices by other private parties will be impossible if the protections of incorporation are denied these individuals who must personally invest in an office and assume the risks associated with it. This will then become a mandate for local communities to replace these offices at their cost or risk, having a void in this needed service in their area. I want to thank Representative Demmer for authoring this bill to repeal the ban on corporate offices that would otherwise become effective in 2012. I also wish to thank the Transportation Committee for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Marty. That was very compelling. Mr. Hurst.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. We are in full support of the proposed legislation brought forward today by Representative Demmer and seek your support on this. As Linda Marty indicated, this is a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. By the year 2012, if this is not repealed, we're very fearful that the Deputy Registrar Network that is doing a fine and outstanding job in the state of Minnesota collecting for the state literally $1 billion a year for the state runs the risk of falling apart. Private deputies have a place in the scheme of the Deputy Registrar Network. Close to 40% of all offices are such private offices. The majority of them are in rural outstate Minnesota, from Wabasha to Pipestone up to Roseau. They're scattered throughout, as well as roughly a dozen in the seven county metropolitan area as well. Recently we approached former Attorney General Michael Hatch and asked for a legal opinion in regards to the existing statute. His opinion suggests that the existing statute would violate the 14th Amendment in the taking of property, and certainly there are constitutional reasons as well to pursue repealing this language. And so with that, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we respectfully ask for your positive consideration of this measure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Demmer, for bringing this bill to us. Here's a question for Mr. Hurst. What, in the event that you talked about the problems that could occur in 2012, if no action were taken, how would this void be filled? Would the cities and counties fill it? Would it just not happen? What would we see on the ground in 2012 if no action were taken on this bill?
Thank you. Very good question. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein. Realistically, I think private offices would have to start questioning whether they want to continue in service without the protections afforded them with incorporation. I'm not suggesting there would be a wholesale drop-dead date, that on that date the entire 72 members would suddenly shut their doors, but I think they would start to question whether they want to continue in this, running the risk. As it currently stands, I mean, they currently put their own personal risk on the line as far as the investment is concerned. These offices, regardless of whether they're public or private, do not receive any financial assistance from the state. They operate solely on those filing fees that are part of the transaction costs. And so our concern is that over time they will start going away, and if that does happen, the state would then again ask the county, and the county has right of refusal. If they said no, then the city, again, they have right of refusal, and then they would have to find a private entity to replace them, and we suspect most individuals probably wouldn't want to assume that new risk and opening up a shop. And quite honestly, these operations, if you were to open a brand new one up today, it would be in excess of $400,000 to open an office.
Madam Chair?
One
quick follow-up then. So I don't see cities and counties here in opposition. Do you have a sense of, do they care about this? Are they supportive of it? Do they oppose it? Are they neutral?
Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, we have shared this as part of our legislative agenda with the AMC as well as the League of Cities. They have not expressed an opposition to this, and also we've also communicated with DBS, and they've indicated they have no opposition to this as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Were you involved when the sunset was put into place? Do we know why the sunset was put into place?
Mr. Hurst.
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, excuse me. I was not involved with the association when the language went in place in 1997. I've been led to believe that the rationale then was, shall we say, perhaps a difference of opinion as to the value of the private deputies. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. Representative Zimmer.
Well, Madam Chair, I've got, just to shed a little more light on the question for Representative Hausman, I actually read through Mr. Hatch's brief. It's very interesting, and there's some history here. Prior to 1984, individuals were the ones who were appointed deputy registrars, and it was in 1994 legislature where they actually, the statute's listed here, but basically they said a corporation is allowed to be a deputy registrar. And then it was in 1997 where there was an amendment that was put onto a bill someplace that said that corporations, anybody who is a deputy registrar, their appointment as a corporation would expire January 1st of 09. And then in 05 there was actually another amendment that delayed it until 2012. So I'm not sure, Representative Hulson, what it's about. I find it very interesting that we would care about the makeup or the ownership or what style, what type of business it is, the ownership or the makeup of it. So I find it very interesting, and there's probably some history there, but we don't know what that is, and I can't think of a single business reason.
All right. Representative Erdahl, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hurst, or how many deputy registrars are there? You said there's number 72 earlier. Is that how many there are?
Mr. Hurst.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, there are roughly 72 private deputies in the network, of which there are 173 total in the state. So 72 of the 173 are private.
Mr. Representative Erdahl.
Not one of my seventh graders. Mr. Hurst, do you have any idea how many people they employ?
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, it varies. Since the majority of them are in rural parts of the state, I would venture to guess and it's that, that most of the rural offices, similar to Linda Marty's, employ in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 people. Certain, depending on the size of the office, for example, the office in Roseau, Minnesota would probably only employ 2 or 3, but certainly there's an office in Winona, and being a larger city, I would suspect they would have closer to 6 or 8 at least. So it varies depending on the location and the size of the operation.
Are there any other comments from the audience or from members? All right, hearing none, the chair renews her motion that House File 1209 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Broad, House File 1192. And you have quite a few handouts, it looks like, Representative. And you have quite a lot of folks. Did you all come up from New Prague?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Welcome. You are my favorite representative.
I didn't know that would happen, Madam Chair.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Whatever you are, Representative Broad, is yours.
Madam Chair, we just seek to bring the spirit of New Prague to you.
Look at this.
Is it Kolotsky? That's exactly what those are, Madam Chair and members. These are our world-renowned Kolotskys from Lau's Bakery in the city of New Prague.
Oh, I'm for Clem. This is great. All right. The chair moves House File 1192, and we recommend it to pass and to be placed on the general register. And if you would please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We have a bill before you. We all have local issues that we bring forward in one way, shape, or form, and this is one that impacts my local area and my town very dramatically and very specifically. The bill not only impacts our ability to collect as a community, but it also impacts us in a very economic way as well. And so I will just make note a couple things, and I brought people who are better to talk about this than I am. But this isn't a new request. The city of New Prague has had this road closure for 15 years of the 25 years we've had the Dozhinki, and just for the record, it's Dozhinki Festival, which is a Czech harvest festival. And so this is not something new. It's something that we're just asking that the legislature consider continue to go forward. It's in the best interest of the safety of the pedestrians and also the traffic that drives through this town. It's a town of over 6,000, but on the days of the festival, we have about 15,000 folks in our community, and we want to keep both them safe as well as our community members safe. A couple of folks I wanted to point out here with us today. We have City Council Member Kay Wilcox here from the City of New Prague, have City Administrator Mike Johnson from the City of New Prague, and then I think Bob Vanasek is also here, and I will make note, too, that he is the honorary consul for the Czech Republic and has been a very strong advocate for our community for many, many years, and a strong advocate here in the legislature. So we have some great folks behind us, but I wanted to toss the comments over to first the Chamber Director, Christy Mock, and then I'll have our Police Chief, Mark Vosetka, add a few words. And just for the record also, both sheriffs of Lesueur County, the Main Street Switzer County, two counties, the Lesueur County Sheriff and the Scott County Sheriff are in support of this proposal.
All right. Welcome, Ms. Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. As Representative Brad mentioned, in September we will host our 25th annual Dozhinki Festival. And it began 25 years ago has roots in economic development, and it has grown to bring 15,000 people to our community each day of the festival. On Friday night, we host a cruise night, and that's a classic car cruise of 400 cars going down our main street, which is Highway 13 and also 19 to MnDOT. And on Saturday, they come back, and we have our Parade of Farm Pride at noon. They can listen to music on four stages and sample a variety of wonderful ethnic delicacies through the food booths that are on our main street. In order to accommodate Dozinki and protect the attendees, we have for the past 15 years requested an extended road closure from MnDOT, and in each of those years we've been granted that extended road closure, 10 years in the Metro District and in the past 5 years with MnDOT District 7 out of Mankato. Upon requesting the road closure for this year, our police chief, Mark Wasapka, was notified that they would no longer they would no longer allow the extended road closure period. In talks with MnDOT, they have said they would not allow it past 2010. We have explored multiple options, but New Prague does not have a parallel road system or a space large enough to accommodate the event as it stands. Much of the character and integrity lies in the fact that our main street is closed for this festival, and that people can go throughout the downtown to the area businesses and also into the many other people who travel from outstate to be a vendor at our festival. We've been through the appeal process, and that's what brings us here today. Safety is absolutely the key to the success of our event. And as Representative Brad mentioned, the police chief will state that it is safe. And we have letters of support from both the Scott and Lee Stewart County Sheriff's Department. The economic impact for the weekend is a very conservative estimate to our community and also to the state at about $650,000. And for our town of just over 6,000, that's a significant impact. So in conclusion, I'd just like to mention that it might be Highway 19 and 13 to MnDOT, but to New Prague, it is our main street, and we respectfully request the passage of this from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And the police chief, if you'd identify yourself.
I'm Chief Mark Pasapka, New Prague Police Department.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Like Ms. Mock had said, the event that we've had for the last 15 years through MnDOT required, and I believe you have a copy of the map in front of you, our detour map, which we worked with Scott County, which is on the Scott County side of the city of New Prague. We worked with their public works, also with MnDOT, to identify that as an appropriate detour for the weekend festival. It is signed by a private contractor according to MnDOT specifications for detour. You can see the, I think you can still see the photo up on the TV screens there. That is the crowd that we get. MnDOT had asked, or kind of alluded to the fact that we, as a community or as the police department, to try to keep these people on our sidewalks if we still wanted to maintain the integrity of the event or the event downtown. I'd like to know how we would accomplish that by looking at that photograph. The event became so big, and that is why we contacted MnDOT to get the road closure. I also learned that, you know, this is only a rule, and it's interpreted in different MnDOT districts according to the traffic engineer there. So it's not being now over to across the board equal treatment for everybody.
All right. Thank you so much. All of us are sitting up here thinking that this summer we need to go on a road trip and check out your festival.
Well, you really should. It's a great place, Madam Chair. And I do know that DOT would like to make a few comments.
Absolutely.
But the picture is worth a thousand words. You couldn't put up fences high enough to keep people on the sidewalks. There's just too many people in that small space.
Mm-hmm.
And moving it is really not an option. So while I appreciate their position, I certainly think this is something that we should be moving forward, and I appreciate the committee's time as well.
Well, thank you. And is there a representative from MnDOT right now who would like to respond?
He wants a kolache.
He didn't take the kolache. He can't be bought. I noticed.
They have no alternative.
Mr. Peterson cannot be bought.
Welcome to the committee, Mr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Scott Peterson from MnDOT, and it's a little bit of a daunting task coming up here after such a great presentation, and everyone got fed at the time when they're, I'm sure, quite hungry, and it was well appreciated. Nonetheless, I am here to speak in opposition to the bill, and certainly this is a nice community festival, and MnDOT in no way wants to try and infringe upon the community's ability to have a festival that is so well attended and obviously does a lot for their community. However, you know, as stewards of our trunk highway system, we also have a responsibility to the users of our system to provide, you know, safe mobility across the state of Minnesota. And the traffic on this particular facility has grown considerably in the 15 years since the first closure of the Main Street was permitted for this festival. And, you know, obviously we're often caught in the position of weighing the local interests against the interests of the people who use our system and travel regionally. One of the concerns that caused the district to tell the community that they were going to deny their request to close the highway starting in 2011 was the growth in traffic, and also the belief that a lot of the traffic does not follow the sign detour but disperses across other roads and creates a traffic hazard in the community. One of the reasons that we have a four-hour limit in our policy for road closures is to again protect the interest of the people who use our system, and we do apply this rule, to my understanding, as uniformly as possible across the state for that reason. And so the only other thing I would like to add is that if this were to become law, obviously then it creates a precedent which would create an opportunity for other communities who may have been turned down and had to alter their plans for their community festivals in similar ways, or as a result of MnDOT's ruling on their request, to come back and ask for individual special treatment under by the legislature as well. So that's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, it doesn't, it seems they've been doing this for 15 years, but, you know, the problems haven't been that great. I mean, I would think that you would be able just to keep on doing it the way they've been doing it. You know, I'm more concerned that if you guys were in New Orleans, that you would try to move all the people off Bourbon Street.
Interesting comment, Erdahl. Representative Broad.
If Chief of Safeguard could just address the issue that the DOT is talking about related to traffic moving into the local streets, because I think from a local police enforcement standpoint, they aren't seeing that.
Yes, I am, Chair, community members. To address MnDOT's concern, first off, that detour of County Road 37, excuse me, is a 9-ton road. It was designed and built as a truck detour truck route for the city of New Prague. It's a 2-lane urban-designed roadway. As far as access or detour traffic going on to local network of roadway, it's one reason why we're asking for the law to close off our Main Street. We have very few residential or side streets that actually go from one side of the community to the other. We have a railroad track that goes through our west edge of the community, so most of those roadways don't go anywhere. We have, as the police department along with the city council, don't believe we have any type of or very minimal complaints from the residents. The residents are aware of what this weekend is all about in their community. If we were to receive, or we are receiving, that many complaints, I know it would be concern of mine, and I definitely know it would be concern of the City Council of New Prague. We haven't had that. We work very hard to make sure that the motorists are aware of the detour
and obviously our local people that are coming to this event use the local network of roadways to park their vehicle and participate in the event. We've had virtually no accidents on any streets during this weekend event, let alone on the detour route itself. We believe it's, as a police chief, I believe this is the only way that this event can stay viable and stay safe, is to keep the highway shut down for the time period that we are asking for.
Thank you very much, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Broad and to your testifiers. I just have to let you know that this is definitely an issue that I didn't really have concerns over until I heard the testimony and saw the bill. And I think about all of the small communities that I represent, and for those of you who grew up in greater Minnesota, you know that every summer people look forward to the small town festivals that are in their communities, and some significance in some of the communities is getting people back to Main Street of these small communities. And there's some small communities, they have their community built where the main state highway does not run down Main Street, so they don't have an issue with this. But there are other communities, such as New Prague, where your main street is your state highway. And a main street is sometimes a fundamental element in having a good small town festival. And most of the time, I agree with MnDOT. This time, I do not. I don't agree, Representative Broad, with the bill being community specific. I think if we went down this road and you wrote New Prague, we would have community after community and bill after bill in the future. I would like to see us resolve this. I would like to see us set a state law or otherwise ask MnDOT to revise their rule in order to allow communities to have weekend, one weekend festival a year or in the summer, where they are able to have it where they want within their community. I just think it's vital to our quality of life in greater Minnesota. And I would hate to see New Prague be told that they have to move their festival off of Main Street, and somehow you hamper the ability for them to bring in the crowds like they used to. So with that, I would really encourage Representative Broad to work with MnDOT and others, and I'd be willing to work with you to try to come up with some solution to this. And one point I want to make about the safety of this. In the communities that I represent, I have so many communities that I represent that have their weekend festivals, and every person knows going to that weekend festival that there's going to be a safe and sober campaign, or that law enforcement are going to be out in droves. Usually you have your state patrol, your county, and your city authorities that have heavy presence. And I have not heard of any incidences, major incidences related to safety when you close off a main street or you close off a road. I know that safety is the utmost importance. So I think that this closing down Main Street in New Prague and not allowing them to have the Friday and Saturday night is going a bit too far.
You've come to testify?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, would you identify yourself, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Johnson. I'm the city administrator for the city of New Prague. We started down that road in our very first meeting with the district MnDOT staff of Mankato. That, as the testifiers have indicated, this event was approved by the Metropolitan MnDOT District for about 10 years and allowed to close for that period of time. It's been allowed to do that for the last 5 years as we moved into MnDOT District 7. Our first efforts with their staff was to try to get grandfathered in or allowed to continue as we have for the last 15 years. We were unsuccessful in that venture, which is why we're here as part of that process. That would have been our first preference. We have done some investigation across different communities, and I'd rather not disclose who they all are, but there are a number of other communities that are allowed to have their community festivals that exceed the 4 hours in nature that is contained within the MnDOT rule and regulation. So we know it's being done elsewhere. We would have preferred not to have to have come to the committee and the legislature to do this, but because of the nature of not having parallel road systems and other vacant properties to hold this off street, and to interact with our downtown business community, we were left with no choice but to do this. Maybe a slight correction to what Christy offered in the beginning is MnDOT was going to ask us to go to 4 hours maximum this coming year in 2009. They relented and allowed us to keep it the same for 2009 and 2010, and it was only beginning in 2011 that we would go to the 4-hour road closure.
Representative Broad, and just so you know, Representative Broad, we have 4 members who would like to ask questions.
Oh, sure.
And we've been here over 2 hours, and we still have 2 more bills, so just let's really keep our thoughts concise.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to let Representative Welty know I'd be happy to work with him and others on that. I would like this bill to continue moving forward to the General Register, because there is a companion bill in the Senate that sits on the Senate floor, and so I'd like to keep that process moving, but I absolutely would be willing to work with you, Representative Welty. Your comments about Main Street are spot on.
Thank you very much. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am sympathetic to MnDOT, however, because they are charged with statewide issues, and I think Representative Welty makes a good point. This is certainly not the only town. What surprises me a little bit is that there wasn't some sort of happy medium. I mean, MnDOT is proposing 4 hours, but unless these are really party animals in New Prague who actually stay on the street,
that guy in the black vest,
from 5:30 p.m. Friday until 6 a.m. Sunday. I mean, even the 6 a.m. I mean, even if you said midnight on Saturday or something. I guess what shocks me is the bill language that says 5:30 p.m. on Friday until 6 a.m. Sunday. That's kind of the opposite extreme of 4 hours, and I just think that. You know, if I am sympathetic with MnDOT, it is because of that long period.
Okay. I have 3 other members. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sympathetic, but I'd also like to point out to the Transportation Committee members, this is a trunk highway. We have a tough time getting anybody to vote for gasoline tax to build highways. And I think MnDOT has gone out and they give until 2011 to try and resolve this. Maybe this shouldn't be a trunk highway. Maybe it should be turned back over to the county state highway so you could close it. I think most cases that I've seen, 4 hours is pretty substantial. Here you're closing it for people that supposedly, in my understanding, this traffic has increased. Is that right, Mr. Peterson? That's the difference between 15 years ago and now. And I've got a little problem to some degree, and I'm sympathetic with it. I think you're okay for this year, but I think in the future, things are changing. And if they give it to 2011 to work it out, either maybe we should look at changing the highway designation, like you take it as a county state highway, and take that trunk highway off of there. Because when I say we, the traveling public is paying for a trunk highway here. And it's over 4 hours. And that's 352nd day of the year, and supposedly that highway's going. I'm just talking from the perspective of the Transportation Committee here, and I can realize you've got a problem, not a problem there, but I'm not aware anywhere else in the state where a trunk highway is closed. I know county, state aid highways and local road streets are closed, but maybe I'm wrong, Mr. Peterson. Is a trunk highway ever closed over 4 hours?
Mr. Peterson, would you like to respond?
It might be in a rarest occasion, once every 100 years, when a success to tenure or something comes, but not annually.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, I'm not completely familiar with all the length of road closings that are granted across the state. It is my understanding, however, that people try to adhere as much or as closely as possible to the 4-hour rule, because that is MnDOT's policy.
Representative Broad.
Madam Chair, there absolutely are specific examples, Representative Leader. I'd be happy to share them with you. You know, it shouldn't vary across DOT districts. There are examples in the Rochester district. There's examples in the Metro district. And actually, there is an example in the Mankato district. They have allowed the city of New Prague to do this. And the period of time is a matter of, I think it's actually appropriate for the events that are active in the community along those number of days. But there are examples. This is not a one and only situation.
And not a lot of communities have a trunk highway driving through their main street as their main street. And so I think this is a unique situation. And I think all state policies should recognize uniqueness as opposed to this one-size-fits-all type approach, because each community has something unique about it. You know, we've got all sorts of unique things in the city of New Prague, one of which is that our trunk highway actually divides two counties as well. So there's all sorts of things that should be taken into account, and a blanket policy doesn't allow for that to happen.
Representative Leader, did you want to follow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It may be unique. I know there are a lot of cities have a trunk highway as the main thing, but when you talk about uniqueness, you say it's you're getting more people every year. The trunk highway is getting more traffic every year too, so that's a different picture now than it was 2 years or 5 years ago. So that has to be recognized, and I think I'm not objecting to it now, but I think if they gave it to 2011, we should be taking a hard look at this, because if that's happening statewide, I'm concerned about who's building highways, who stand for it. We don't have money. We're trying to pass gasoline tax and some of these taxes to build highways. We don't get the support in the legislature. The people that come here, I'd like to see them support highways when they want to do all this. We're building a highway that's paid for by people that pay for gasoline and license fees, and they drive down the street, and that's fine. And I still think it's good to have communities like this, but for the most part, on an annual thing, if you can work it out, it's fine. But there's a cost, indirect cost to the highway right now. There's a liability cost, in my opinion, Mr. Peterson. We're changing a detour, and that's a designated highway. I mean, sure, nobody's going to get killed, or we hope they don't, or there's not a lawsuit, but if that happens, where's it going to be directed? It's deep pockets. It's a state. And again, I'm not objecting to this at all, being here now, but I think in the future, I think it has to be addressed differently, or maybe you shouldn't use the whole, you know, extra day at 4 hours. That, in my opinion, is pretty reasonable. And I have a community where the trunk highway goes through, and the most we ever, not that I want it anymore, but they've moved there. So maybe you can't move it, but I think you should take a hard look at it. Especially, I'd like support when we come to constructing and wanting highway funding from all of the people that want all of these things, too. Because that highway is paid by users.
Would you like to comment?
Madam Chairman, Representative Leiter, as Police Chief Vosseca indicated, is that we have a county road to the north, County Road 37, that's a 9-ton road, that ends up being about 9/10 out of the way distance travel for the implementation of the detour route. In the permit approval that we received from MnDOT, we also are required to assume the liability for the closure of the road for the event that's undertaken. We work with the Chamber of Commerce and have insurance for the event specifically taken out by them. And if this was something that was new and just getting started, I would wholeheartedly agree with you. The event, to kind of generally respond, is that they set up different food vendors, different craft vendors, with the Friday evening parade, the teardown, the cleanup that we do during the evening, the startup of the parade the next day, and the continuation of the event, and then the final cleanup. I think all of that with the road closure is about 33 hours. So it's not an event that's just getting started today or just got started yesterday. It's been in force and effect for 15 years. We're not aware of any significant singular activity or event that precipitated the review by MnDOT to change this. As we indicated, we are aware of other events, and so we would wholeheartedly ask you to support this bill this evening.
All right, we have two more comments. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It might be just Sikorsky talking, but I believe I've, in running the New Prague Half Marathon, I think I've been on the road from 5:30 on Friday till 6 a.m. Sunday, so I thank you for keeping the road closed for that event. Representative Broad, I wouldn't use the word unique. New Prague is not unique. A number of towns have a major highway going through them that want to close it for an event. So I'd encourage you not to use the word unique. You're like a lot of small towns, at least in southern Minnesota, that want to hold an event like this. To MnDOT, I would urge MnDOT to work with New Prague and keep talking to New Prague. I don't like this specific bill either. This does concern me, although I did bring one last night, so I have to keep a little bit quiet. But to me, this isn't a tremendous inconvenience. Certainly turning the road over to Kassab might be one way to solve this, but I'm going to support the bill because I think we have to support these festivals and small communities. They're not unique.
And Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bet maybe can wrap this up with a couple of quick comments about process and a question as well. Thank you, Representative Broad. Representative Broad came to me very early in the session and explained this to me, and I've agreed to hear this because I think it's an important bill. I also support it for the reasons Representative Morrow and others have outlined. But I do believe that the proper process would be for this bill to continue to travel on its own. We'll see, you know, we'll go to the floor and we'll see what happens there. I assume there'll be some support there. But the issue that Representative Welty brought up is important, and we'll just have to see after this. Is there going to be an onslaught of these individual requests next year? We'll see. If there is, then we'll have to probably go the route that Representative Welty has talked about, and I'd rather not do an omnibus community festival bill. And then, you know, maybe we could have some kind of a, you know, uniform, you know, policy where this exists. But, you know, at this point, members, you know, I think, as Representative Broad indicated, let's move this separately as is with the motion, and then, you know, kind of see what happens as a result. Maybe we won't get these. Maybe we will. If we do, Transportation Policy Committee will put together a bill, and then we'll work on it. Very quick question, prompted by the picture, and your answer won't affect my vote because I support this, but could you describe a Czech Kurd and a Czech dog? what makes a Kurd a Czech Kurd?
Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, it has to revolve.
Okay.
And I appreciate Representative Morrow's comments. My comment related to uniqueness really should have been focused on the fact that our highway also divides us in terms of county line. And the county line to the north is Scott County, and on the south side of the street, you're in Lissouer County. And so that is one of the few communities in the state that have that. But I appreciate your comment. We are not unique in that. The importance of these festivals is absolutely crucial.
Thank you. Do you have any other final questions? I'd like to bring this to a vote. All right. I'm going to renew the motion that House File 1192 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. The motion carries. Thank you very much for the
collaboration.
Madam Chairman, if anybody is interested, September 18th and 19th is Dojinki Days.
Okay.
You're all welcome.
Well, it's a road trip. Representative Dean?
18th.
Okay. Representative Daphne?
You've got one in the bullpen right here. You know what? It's really kind of a lousy one. It's just a square. And so, and it's always been one direction. So you know you're going to stick.
All right, Representative Daphne?
Wait.
Good evening.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It was afternoon when I was here before.
Yes, it was. And you are now bringing House Call 1490?
That's correct.
All right. So Representative Daphne would like us to move House File 1490 to be held over for a possible inclusion. Was there a fiscal note with this?
Madam Chair, the understanding is there would be minuscule, if any, fiscal impact.
Okay, very good. And then you have an amendment to go with this bill?
That's correct. Right. There may be a couple of amendments floating around in members' packets, so let me be clear that the amendment that is the author's amendment is the A090265 amendment, A090265.
All right. So the chair will move A090265 in order to get the bill in the shape Representative Daphne would like. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I can say with the adoption of the 0265 amendment that House File 1490 as amended now represents an agreement between the
locomotive, or excuse me, the railroad unions who initially brought me this legislation and the railroads. And I'm told that that's a pretty infrequent event around here. Members of the committee will have a better appreciation than I. The bill was brought to me by the railroad unions in response to real concerns that they have regarding the safety of railroad workers when being transported via van from either train to train or from terminal to terminal. Safety both for those workers and the community at large. It's narrowly crafted in a way to only affect the transportation of railroad workers and no other class of driver or business. It ensures registration, training, regulation, and testing safety. Increased insurance liability limits assures passengers with appropriate compensation should accidents occur. There's a number of individuals in the room, I'm not sure how with an interest in this legislation, Madam Chair, I'm not sure how many are wishing to testify. I am here tonight with Mr. Dave Brown from the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, and I do know that he wishes to speak.
Mr. Brown, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
I'm David Brown. I'm the Minnesota State Chairman for the...
Can you use the microphone, please?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm David Brown. I'm the Minnesota State Legislative Chairman for the Brotherhood of the Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. I'm here today to thank the Madam Chair and the committee members for allowing me to give some testimony on this House Bill 1490. I will try to explain some of the lingo on the railroad. The railroad is very unique in how we have our own culture and background history. In railroad terminology or slang, as you may, deadheading. When we deadhead, we are transporting from a terminal to a train or to a terminal, or vice versa. When we are dead, we are extinguished our hours of service, which is 12 hours. Once we have finalized 12 hours on duty, we can no longer perform service. And they transport us from train to terminal. When I started off in the railroad, we were transported by train, generally. That was when they actually still shoveled coal into a potbelly stove in the cabooses, which we don't have anymore. Things have moved on to just the locomotive, but and longer runs. We run sometimes 300 miles on a run. And a lot of times you just cannot do that in 12 hours. So the railroads have utilized a very unique business of motor carriers. They call them contract carriers because they're under contract with the railroads to transport railroad employees from terminal to terminal, train to train. I had about a 7-page testimony here, but I'll alleviate that a little bit because I'm sure you guys would be real pleased with that. What I could go on and on about railroad career. the UTU and the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers jointly have worked together with this bill, and we brought it to station with the carriers. And I'm pleased to bring this bill forward to your review to... hopefully give our members and myself, because I'm a working full-time engineer also, deadheading in these vans, protection and give these drivers for these motor carriers the training and the checks and balances that the public in the state of Minnesota demands for people that ride their highways and their roads
All right, thank you, Mr. Brown, very much. Do you have any other testifiers that would like to speak?
I believe there's at least one other individual.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the tape, please.
My name is Michael Weiner. I'm an attorney at the law firm of Yeager, Young, Bauer, and Barzak in Minneapolis. Madam Chair and members, I'm going to be very brief and simply address what the purpose is of the bill, which is to deal with a gap that in the coverage of railroad employees who are injured on the job. Just purely for historical reasons, railroaders are not covered by workers' compensation. They have a unique federal law called the Federal Employers Liability Act that requires them to prove fault on the part of the railroad.
and is very common for railroaders as part of their jobs, as explained, to be transported by these contract vans of the railroads. It is also not uncommon for there to be accidents that occur caused by the fault of drivers other than the van drivers, by drivers who are either uninsured or who do not have adequate insurance. And that leaves these railroad employees who are injured on the job in the situation where they have a gap in their compensation. They don't have a claim against their railroad employer because the van driver was not at fault. They have claims against people who unfortunately do not have adequate coverage, or they have no insurance. And this bill addresses that gap in a very narrow, tailored fashion to only deal with railroad transport vans. What it does is it raises, focused or it's premised on the federal standards for insurance for larger vans, and simply says that those liability limits apply to all vans carrying railroad employees. And to deal with the concern of other drivers out there who cause accidents, who do not have enough insurance or no insurance, it mandates the same limits for uninsured and underinsured coverage. It has been worked out with the railroad representatives to address their concerns. It simply takes care of this gap that has existed, and I can tell you it is a real concern. It's a recurring problem. My firm has represented clients who have gone without adequate compensation because of this gap, and this bill addresses that gap, and it's a pretty straightforward, simple fix.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee members? All right. Hearing none, then, in consultation with Chair Hornstein, he recommends that this move to the floor, if that's all right with you, Representative Daphne.
Thank you very much, Ben.
All right. So the Chair renews her motion that House File 1490, as amended, be approved and sent to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
No. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative. And now, Representative Dean, we're saving the best for last.
Yes, food?
I guess you didn't want it.
Representative Dean, you left the room and I called on you and I was...
Oh.
I felt so sad. You had to wait longer.
We appreciate your time.
That's quite all right. Thank you so much. Representative Dean is... I will move for him House File 1204, and it will be held over. It will be sent to the Commerce Committee, it looks like. Is that your intention, Representative Dean?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. House File 1204 has a companion in the Senate that is currently on the Senate floor, and we would prefer this to travel separately. However, there's some issues that we want to take with some commerce issues that have come up since it's been passed in the Senate, and I think that the Commerce Committee is the most appropriate place to do that. So, with that,
follow that route, and if you would explain the bill, please.
I also do have a DE amendment. If you'd like to take that now, we could do that.
Sure. Be happy to. The H1 204 DE1 amendment, we'll put it in the shape that Representative Dean would like. So all those who are in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. All right. The amendment is adopted. Please explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And we are dealing with the DE amendment. It's H120DE1. And what this bill is a very simple bill to understand, so I won't take very long in explaining it, but I do want to leave time for some testimony and some questions because it is not without controversy, and it's not without some issues that will be brought about either by doing this bill. We will have problems and issues that need to be, challenges that need to be taken care of. If we don't do it, we will continue to have challenges. Basically, if you've probably all been to Stillwater, and if you haven't, you need to go there and spend as much money as possible. It's a great place to shop and to have antiques and take your date out for dinner. But if you notice that there is a historic bridge, which you kind of associate with the town of Stillwater, has been an issue for a long time. When I first ran for office in 2004, I had met with a woman who was asking me, quizzing me about the bridge replacement, and I was sounded very knowledgeable. I thought to her, and she went inside her house and came back with a newspaper clipping from 1948 announcing her husband had been appointed to the bridge replacement committee. So I don't pretend to know the entire history of the bridge, but I do know that there are issues associated with it that we need to take care of this year. The three issues with this particular bill deal with trucks. Number one, the city came to me with this in 2006, dealing with large trucks moving across the bridge. There was difficulty with some of these trucks in downtown and with the bridge itself. Number one, the trucks are too big. As you'll see, I've got a little short video clip. You'll see just how small the bridge is if you've driven across it. It's very narrow. It's almost impossible for two trucks to pass each other when they're on the bridge. This is also a converted lift bridge, meaning that the center, the second span of the bridge goes up to allow the boats to go back and forth underneath it. It creates traffic issues going back and forth. And perhaps the size of the trucks continuing into downtown, they can't make the turns. It causes a lot of problems in downtown Stillwater, backing up the traffic. The trucks physically cannot make the turn. They go up on the curb, and pedestrians have to move back. It's a safety issue. We've also had a very measured, and we can show that this has happened with the chief, of trucks that actually use Stillwater as a diversion point from crossing at Hudson, because at Hudson they have to go and be weighed. When they go through Stillwater, they don't, so they're sneaking across through Stillwater to avoid the weigh station. Those are the three main issues with why we are moving forward to reduce this. What we're doing is we're trying to keep this down to 26,000 pounds. We've had some debate with DOT over the size of the vehicles that would be acceptable to them. They currently don't have a position on the bill. They are neither against it nor are they for it. And Mr. Dorgan can testify to DOT's position on the bridge as they did in the Senate. And what I'd like to do next is just to kind of give you a scale of the bridge, just show you a quick video, if this still works, of moving through. Does this not work? Representative Broad screwed up my AV. She's not here with her AV license.
Well, speaking of Representative Broad, I was just wanting to tell the members that Lumberjack Days in Stillwater is a prime festival that you should try to attend. So.
I'd like to quote the St. Croix River and Highway 90.
There we go. Something happened.
You know what? I think we'll skip the AV portion.
We'll imagine the bridge.
We'll move ahead. You guys have been across the bridge, haven't you? Anyway, we'll move ahead with that because I don't want to delay you here any longer than you have to be, but I do want to allow time for testimony because this isn't without controversy. There's some folks we need to address with commerce moving across the bridge. Obviously, we don't want to do that. We do want to get the bad actors as we can, and we can have some testimony on that. Also, just want to right now maybe introduce Councilman Roush and kind of go through a little bit of what the city's been dealing with.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Tim Roush. I'm the Stillwater City Council member. Mayor Hirsky sends his regrets. He's traveling with the governor, inspecting the troops at the current time. As Representative Dean mentioned, the bridge is very old at 78 years, which probably puts it...
Yeah, check out the way this border behind me is bent. The mayor says it's not just that there are so many trucks on this bridge, but that so many trucks on this bridge are unsafe.
And we're just waiting for an accident to happen.
An accident burst into the ambulance tonight when a truck took out a minor cross beam. Plenty of signs of damage on and off the bridge. Either trucks are forced to take too wide a turn into other lanes like this one to get on the bridge, or risk side-swiping this light post, even once damaging the front of this building.
They've actually clipped off their awning out in front of our restaurant here.
And down at the side, those who visit Stillwater for the truck to really the downtown is clean.
You know, it's very inconvenient, but many things are stinking. You can't, you know, they line up along the main street.
And last year, when the state patrol inspected trucks going over the bridge, over half of them had safety violations on certain days. Mayor Ken Harrison says they often use the bridge to avoid the scales on I-94.
And so when you see 50% of the trucks being pulled off the road, they're going through Stillwater for a reason. They're skirting the law.
So Harrison was at the state capitol today for a transportation committee hearing on a bill to ban at least the semis from the bridge. And word late this afternoon, the bill is still trucking past committee, a small first step.
As you can see, the floor is near 13 feet 2 inches, but the mayor tells me only half joking that his backup plan may just be to put a welcome to Stillwater sign over the bridge, making the clearance 10 feet and forcing trucks to turn around. In Stillwater, Brad Sutton.
You can see, ironically, on the day of the committee hearing in the Senate, another genius plowed into the bridge with a truck. So that helped the bill out in the Senate. But maybe you can continue.
Mr. Rouse.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. This is another main street downtown that is also a state highway, and that feeds to the problem as well. As Mayor Christie in the video mentioned, that the trucks, what typically they do is, there's a way station near Eau Claire, Wisconsin. They'll cut up through the county and state highways in Wisconsin up to Stillwater, cross the bridge, try to make a left-hand turn. They cannot go straight because of the very steep hill going up, the road going up the hill. So they're forced to take a left turn, cutting off pedestrians on the sidewalk, and so on. There's also a way station 1 to 2 miles west of the Minnesota border on Highway 94. So at Eau Claire, if they cut up the Stillwater and then back down again, they're actually skirting two of the way stations. Last year, in combination with the Stillwater Police Department, the Minnesota State Patrol did 4 different saturation stops, which last somewhere between 4 and 6 hours. During these inspections, the State Patrol randomly inspected some of the vehicles coming across the bridge. In the first stop, 52% of the trucks that were stopped were pulled out of service. Not just stopped, but they were literally in such bad violations that they were pulled off the road. In the second saturation stop, over 61% of those vehicles were pulled out of service. In the third saturation stop, 77% of the trucks that were inspected were pulled out of service. In the last saturation stop, 64% of the trucks were pulled out of service. It's very obvious that these trucks do not belong on a main street. And it's very clear what they're doing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Representative Holder.
And Madam Chair, and I don't know if these questions are for MnDOT, but I'm assuming that when you have a bridge, you want the same weight posted at each side. And so I'm not clear as far as, is this a Minnesota bridge and how those rules work, or do we, I mean, it's kind of like we're working with Wisconsin. We sell a range. I don't think the Wisconsin Department of Transportation or legislature probably really cares what the Minnesota legislature says. So how does that work?
Representative Dean?
Madam Chair and Representative Holbert, perhaps we could have
Mr. Peterson?
From DOT, but it's a 50-50 bridge. It's 50 Wisconsin, 50 Minnesota. It's the bridge, but the maintenance portion?
The signing?
Anyway, we've addressed that we would pay for the signs that would be posted on either side, but that's one of the issues that we're working out, is that the enforcement would be on our side, but that would be the bridge. The bridge weight would be for vehicles going either way. Obviously, the Minnesota enforcement would be from our side of the bridge. Mr. Degnan, maybe.
Yes, welcome to the committee and identify yourself, please.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Dan Dorgan. I'm the bridge engineer with Minnesota DOT. And in response to your question, Representative Holdberg, I guess that is one of the points I wanted to make on the legislation. First of all, MnDOT's position on this is neutral, so I'd like to make that clear from the beginning. But regarding that specific question on Wisconsin, we do have the caution that we're uncertain how Wisconsin DOT will respond to the legislation as joint owner of the bridge. And so our ability to fully implement the legislation is dependent on that joint ownership with Wisconsin. Given that, I know before this hearing I did speak briefly to Representative Dean that I guess we'd like to respectfully suggest that the wording, I think it's on lines 1.8 and 1.9 where the word shall arrange is used, that Representative Holdberg cited, perhaps that should be changed to shall request the state of Wisconsin post similar signs on the Wisconsin side, because I think otherwise shall arrange implies an authority our commissioner really does not have on the other state.
Right. Do you have a follow-up, Representative Holdberg?
Well, Madam Chair, has Wisconsin agreed to this weight limit? How do you come to, do they care what the bridge is posted at as long as they own half of it, or?
Mr. Dorgan?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Wisconsin has, they're aware of the legislation. We sent them copies of the bill, but they've taken no comment or position on it at this point. I think they're waiting to see if the legislation is enacted.
And, Madam Chair, if I might, what is the bridge posted at this point?
Mr. Dorgan.
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, currently the bridge is posted for 40 tons, which is a legal weight. That's 80,000 pounds. It's posted that way. There are no, and I'd like to clarify that for the committee there, with that posting, no overloads are allowed on the bridge, so trucks that have overweight permits or normally would be allowed are prohibited from this bridge. Also, the additional weight by state law that you can carry during the winter would not be allowed upon this bridge. So it's posted at legal. We did a load rating on the bridge last July, and it does, despite the deterioration that has occurred since 1931, it still rates for legal loads. So the proposed weight in the bill is not tied to an engineering calculation.
Okay, and if I just want a very quick question, when will you have a new solar water bridge? So how long are we going to be dealing with this issue?
That project is under development at this time. Didn't realize it was since 1948. I didn't think it was quite that long.
47, I think.
Okay. I apologize. I think it's 2013. Representative Dean, would you?
I haven't been around that long, but I've been around long enough in Stillwater to know that I'm not going to make a promise on that.
Thank you, Madam. Okay. Representative Hornstein has a question related to this.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and to the point that Mr. Dorgan, you made just now on the engineering specification not tied to any specific weight. My question is, there were some pretty serious issues raised in that Channel 5 report, and one of them was that the trucks avoid way stations on I-94, and there have been instances when these trucks have exceeded that weight restriction that is on there. You know, whether it's tied to an engineering specification or not, it is there. So do you have any concerns about the weight problems that are existing and the number of trucks that are going across this bridge and the frequency of them, which they appear to me to be serious issues?
Mr. Dorgan?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think probably what drives the increases that volume of truck is when the weigh scales are open. Obviously, the truckers communicate with each other and some take alternate routes. We do have concerns with weight on the bridge. That's why it is posted to not exceed legal weight. So enforcement, we appreciate the enforcement we receive not only from State Patrol but from local law enforcement. to try to control those weights. So certainly we want the weights held to legal weights.
Right. And Representative Morrow has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Organ, I think you've answered part of my question, but in looking at the legislation, for example, you mentioned concern about the 26,000, and I understand what you're saying about the legal bill, but to follow up on what Representative Fortine is saying, there clearly are some concerns with this bridge, both with access to the bridge and the weights on the bridge. Does MnDOT have a proposed solution other than the status quo to offer the Stillwater?
Well, listen, Madam Chair and members of the committee, Representative Morrow, we're continuing to work on replacement of the bridge. So, you know, our solution is to try to replace that structure. And, of course, we were about the middle 90s. We were about ready to go to letting. We all know that. That was delayed for other reasons. We now have the funding with Chapter 152 to replace the bridge. And Wisconsin will have the funding also. So we are, I think we've got the best hope of replacing the bridge now than we did since mid-90s when we thought we were close at that time. So our solution, you know, admittedly is a few years away. We really need to replace that to get traffic off that and convert it to a pedestrian bridge as the commitments have been made.
Well, Madam Chair, if I just could follow up, I guess I would ask is there an interim solution until construction of a new bridge? I ask in part because I don't feel qualified to say what the weight limit should be on the bridge. So I'm asking MnDOT, is there anything that can be done other than maintain the status quo between now and the opening of a new Stillwater Bridge?
Mr. Dorgan.
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, the way state statutes and rules are set up, load posting and specifically is covered in rules, that when we post a bridge, it will be based on, it refers to the operating rating, so it's an engineering analysis. So when we do the engineering analysis, and again we did that last July, it can carry legal loads. So as engineers, we can't come up with a different number than, you know, what our calculations show us. So that is why we have not changed the postings from the 40 tons that it's currently posted at, from that current restriction. So I do not have a different solution to offer other than our eventual replacement of that bridge. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dean or whoever. Where's the heaviest traffic? Is it from Stillwater to Wisconsin or Wisconsin to Stillwater?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl. Maybe I'll let the Chief answer that because he's done saturation studies and pulled lots of people over, not me.
I have specifically. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Identify yourself, please.
My name is John Ganaway. I'm the Chief of Police in Stillwater.
Welcome.
Representative Erdahl, it probably goes both ways, to be perfectly honest with you. About 12,000 vehicles a day use that bridge. So sometimes they're going to Wisconsin, sometimes they're coming from Wisconsin, vice versa. So there's no specific answer for that.
Representative Erdahl.
What's on the other side of the bridge from Stillwater? It's Holton, Wisconsin. It's a light, it's probably mostly agriculture area. There's some slight housing districts, things like that. So trucks don't have the same problems going that way than they do trying to get through Stillwater. When they go through Stillwater is the intersection of Highway 95 and Chestnut Street, which they either have to make a left turn onto Highway 95 from the bridge, or from Highway 95 onto Chestnut to the bridge. It's too small for most semi trucks, and they can't negotiate that corner as it's simply too small. So what happens is they either have to back up the vehicles that are waiting, which causes traffic jams. They drive up onto the curb and they destroy infrastructure, utility boxes. Last year, they hit a utility box and knocked out the power to downtown for about 6 hours. So that's the main issue. When they get on the Wisconsin side, they have to go up a very steep hill, so they don't have to negotiate the tight corner in Wisconsin as they do in Stillwater.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just to respond to Representative Erdahl's question, it does go both ways.
there is, if you go up the hill, I believe there is a strip club at the top of the hill, which if it was on our side, you would have taken care of with your legislation. So if they had somebody over there, perhaps with your idea, maybe we could take care of a little bit of that traffic. But to get back to Representative Morrow's question about the specific rating of the bridge and what's safe and what's not safe, DOT does a great job. We've got, 13,000 bridges across the state, and they've got a big task, and they've got to obviously look at the standards and carry it across the state. This is a safety rating of 38 on the one of the 100. It's a fracture critical bridge. It also has some architectural features to it that makes it more likely to get taken out by a unsafe or not very smart person in a truck. When it was taken out last, I happened to be downtown when the truck hit it last summer, and it was out for 6 weeks. And you know what that can do to downtown. So it's not just the ability of the bridge to maintain the weight, but it's also the architecture of the bridge itself and also the configuration in downtown.
Representative Hausman. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, when that bridge is built, what we will see is a burst of development on the Wisconsin side of the river and thus significant increase in Highway 36 traffic. So I propose that bridge will be built when we decide it will be the only significant toll bridge in the state of Minnesota, and we will put a very large toll on that bridge. But that's not what Madam Chair, I thought the gentleman from MnDOT made a good point that arrange with the state of Wisconsin is probably not good language, and I would move on line 1-8, and I don't think this does damage to the bill, but on delete arrange with and insert request that. On line 1-9, delete for the posting of and insert post so that it would read and shall request that the state of Wisconsin post similar signs on the Wisconsin side of the bridge. I think that was the spirit of your amendment.
Thank you. I will take that as an official motion to amend. Are you wanting to discuss?
Well, it was just a suggestion from the gentleman, and I think it's right to say arrange with the state of Wisconsin is probably not.
You weren't moving that as
No, I'm moving amendment.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Are you comfortable with that language, Representative?
Absolutely.
Okay. Is there any discussion related to the amendment? Mr. Burris, would you please restate that?
Madam Chair and members, the amendment is to amend the H-1204-DE1 amendment. Page 1, line 8, delete arrange with and insert request that. Page 1, line 9, delete for the posting of and insert post.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there any discussion? All right. Let's go ahead and vote. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. We still have two more people. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Dorgan are also to represent. When I first saw the bill, I see weight restrictions, and I was fully aware that the commissioner didn't need the bill to post it for weight restrictions. And as Mr. Dorgan pointed out, it's not the problem of weight, it's the problem we want to keep trucks off. And is there, Mr. Dorgan, is there a problem here? Now you're posting down, but technically, they could put a sign, no trucks allowed, but that allows the small trucks, which you don't want to. I presume that's the reason. But I had a little problem when I saw it with the weight restriction right off the bat. It would appear to me trucks, no trucks allowed would make more sense, but that's got a problem too, apparently.
Mr. Dorgan? Representative Dean, whomever?
Well, Madam Chair, I think I can probably speak to the bill's intent. The intent, obviously, is to keep the large trucks downtown, and the mechanism for doing that was weight. We could have also done it by length or some other means that we could have said for these vehicles to stay off. But the thing that made the most sense was weight. And some of the debate in the Senate centered around how big, what kind of trucks are. So for example, a little UPS truck might weigh 20,000 pounds. And a tractor semi might weigh 80,000 pounds, so that we could allow the little delivery trucks to continue to cross. That's where we picked out the 26,000 pounds. So that's why it's not zero and it's not 100, it's where it is. But that's also something that we're willing to look at and to work with the Truckers Association and DOT as we move forward into the Commerce Committee, because that's exactly the debate that we need to have so that we don't have some unintended consequences for folks on either side of that river.
Representative Leaders, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, my concern is that MnDOT is posting down when they know it. Not that it's a problem, but that's something you don't want to be accused of either. And I would presume, Mr. Dorgan, and that would, I don't have a problem with the bill, but I mean, just the language in it, when I saw it, I knew that you didn't need a weight restriction on the grid.
Mr. Dorgan.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Leader, members of the committee, one other point I would add to what Representative Dean said, as it was discussed, as the bill was being discussed, the Senate version and I think the House, one thing that was recognized is weight is something that law enforcement can enforce. Trying to restrict in other means might be more difficult to enforce, whereas weight is an enforceable piece that they're accustomed to enforcing. So, as Representative Dean said, the weight was set to try to recognize certain types of trucks, delivery trucks that could still utilize the bridge. And you know, lastly, I mentioned MnDOT is neutral on the bill, and I think it's because of the specific issues here. Representative Dean is, and along with the councilman and chief, have done a good job of laying out the specific issues that are occurring in Stillwater. So we hope that if this is enacted, it's recognized that this is specific to that situation, and we don't have a flurry of other legislation in other locations, because after all, our mission is to provide access to all users of the system. But there are specific issues here, and that's why our position is neutral on this.
All right. We have no other members listed to ask questions, and so I am going to renew my motion that House File 1204, as amended, be recommended to travel.
Madam Chair, I don't think you asked if there's anybody that wanted to testify in opposition to this, and I don't know if the truckers want to.
Thank
or...
Thank you for saying that.
Sorry, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Representative Holbrook. You're absolutely correct, and please state your name.
So, Madam Chair, members, my name is Amber Backus. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Trucking Association. We don't condone folks using Stillwater to bypass the Hudson Way scales, and we hope that's not our members doing that. But we did suggest to Representative Dean that we do have some concerns about cutting it off at 26,000 pounds, because there are a wide range of commercial motor vehicles between the 26,000 pounds and the 80,000 pounds. And we actually do have some members located in the East Metro there and do rely on that bridge for the most quick access for their customers and their routes to avoid additional costs and delays. So we're hoping to work with him moving the bill forward to find some middle ground there to see if we can bump it up from 26,000 but not go all the way to 80,000 pounds for those folks that do rely on the bridge to help their business and are operating legally.
Thank you. And is there Mr. Dickey who wanted to say anything?
Madam Chair,
yes.
I spoke with him earlier, and he decided not to testify at this time. We're going to be working on it in between now.
Okay,
and
that's excellent. All right, so I think it's safe this time. I am going to renew my motion that House File 1204, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Commerce Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Hornstein, when is our next meeting?
Members, first of all, thanks to everyone for hanging in there tonight. I apologize. I had a bill up in another committee, so I was an hour late. But we are meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and then again on Friday at 10:30 in the basement. And then our final meeting for the first part of our session, is going to be on April 1st, and we are going to be taking up some Senate files and a few House files that met Senate deadline but still need to be met in the House. And then this committee will be done as of April 1st. Representative Hausman.
Representative Hornstein, I was thinking it's a Friday, though. You don't have any bills scheduled. It is only if something is sent over.
No, Representative Hausman, we in consultation with the Senate, we've been pretty efficient at actually sending bills along to the floor in other committees, but the Senate is developing an omnibus transportation policy bill, so we will have a small bill this year. What we've been doing with a lot of the bills this week has been laying them over for possible inclusion. So we will have a small omnibus transportation policy bill. And members, it's really not my intention to just then open up the gates and have anyone who hasn't had a bill jacketed come and, you know, try to get their bill heard on Friday. We're going to have a very narrowly focused bill that will include bills that have already passed this committee. And then we're going to put that bill together on Friday. So I don't anticipate a long meeting on Friday. So, but that's for the purposes of lining up a number of these bills with the Senate. Representative Holbert.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Hornstein, will you be sure to get the minority members' Excel file or whatever of what bills are being considered for the policy bill as soon as you try to have that information?
Madam Chair.
You know,
Madam Chair?
You're cheering me.
No, it's...
Oh, okay.
Representative Holbrook, yes. As a matter of fact, we just only had a preliminary meeting this morning with Mr. Burris, and so he, I imagine, will have a draft possibly by, what, Thursday, maybe, Mr. Burris? And then you can send that, if not earlier, to Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair... Is today Tuesday?
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I can probably get a draft at some point on Thursday.
And Madam Chair and Chair Hornstein, you've been very gracious about this issue in the past, but I'm assuming, dependent on when we get this information, the ability for us to bring amendments in a timely fashion will be reflect when we actually know what's going to be considered for the bill.
Absolutely. Representative Holbrook, and you know, we might even be able to get a sneak preview later in the day tomorrow, but we'll just see. I know Mr. Burris has a lot going on, but you know, we definitely want to get this to you so that there's no surprises. But again, this will be a bill quite different from the last two transportation policy bills that were, I think, over 100 pages each and contained quite a number of very controversial and volatile issues. So it's really totally not the chair's intention to do that, but we will share this with you. And again, my intention is to have several short, non-controversial bills that we've already acted on.
And Madam Chair and Chair Hornstein, my comments are probably more reflective of the last couple bills rather than what I sense your intention is for this year. So.
Yeah. We live and learn. And members, by the way, I have four extra kolaches as well. That will be given out on a first come, first served basis. So.
Thank you.
And thank you. And also thanks to Representative Swales, who did a wonderful job, and I really appreciate it, Representative Swales. And with that, we are adjourned.